Exile on Bad Street. Yes, another episode of Exile. It's been a while, but yes, I am back. I'm your host, Chris Zellner. And this time, I'm joined by an old friend. Yes, I'm joined by my cover-to-cover co-host. Been way too long since we've done a show together. I'm joined by the one, the only, Rob Naylor. Welcome back, Naylor.
What's up, buddy? I'm going to get my magazines out. Oh, but wait, we're not going to do...
No, that's why it's an Exile show. No, this is a show that you just, in the DM, just mentioned, let's do a Savage show. And I was like, great, let's do one. So that's how this show came together. So we're going to do a show.
Huh? Let's talk about Randy Savage. Cool.
Okay. Yeah, Macho Man Randy Savage, you know, and... I was trying to think of a good title for the show, you know, something like that. And then Shinedown came to my mind. Shinedown had a song, The Sound of Madness. So that's the title of this show.
That's a better title than Pistol Whipping Bill Dundee in a Parking Lot.
So, well, we'll get into that. But, yeah, so... why? The first question is why? Why did you want to do a show about Macho Man Randy Savage?
Because as I get older, and even since we did our wrestling magazine show, like my tastes have changed a lot. Like I look at the excesses of wrestling and modern wrestling, if you'll say that. I don't look at it like it's a dirty word and that wrestling sucks. I just know I don't like it as much as the stuff from the 80s and 90s anymore. There's some stuff I really enjoy, and then there's just a lot of it where I just get checked out of it. You know, it's the two and three quarters count culture of wrestling just kind of has me checked out a little bit. And like Macho Man was very excessive. Like he's literally the guy that did five elbows on Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania at the kick out. So like I get that too. But like if you look back on Randy Savage's entire in-ring Rolodex, like he's got to be, like, God damn it. Everyone says I have 215 people in my top five, but I think he's got to be a top five guy for me now. Like, and he was just so good. He was so explosive. He was so sudden. He was so believable. His promos were great. He's the best all-around guy. Like, he could work. He could cut promos. He was entertaining. He could be on commentary. He was a high flyer. He could brawl. You know, he's a great tag worker. Like, he just checks off. He was a great heel and a good guy. Like, checks off every box when it comes to a fantastic professional wrestler. And we're going to get into a lot of that today. But, and he was an angle guy. Like, he literally was a guy who, especially in WWF, like, he always had a good angle attached to him, it seemed. So, like, that helped me really enjoy him, too, because he's one of those wrestlers just based on the angles he had. You could go through his whole career and kind of picture it in your head. Like, oh, okay, well, then, you know, he got bit by the snake, and then he feuded with Jake. Oh, and then, you know, he feuded with Flair because the pictures of Elizabeth. And, oh, then, you know, Macho Man versus Machismo, Razor Ramon. It just goes on and on and on, but... You know, he just is really fucking awesome, and that's pretty much the easiest way to say it. Like, I'm just like, man, out of all the wrestlers I could talk to Chris Zellner about, like, I'm sure this would be just a wonderful person to talk about. So I'm sure we could both just drop glowing opinions and remind each other of different cool shit that he did.
Well, and yes, we'll get into that as we go along. But, okay, so what do you remember about the first time you saw Macho Man?
Oh, one of the first guys I saw, it was 1985, and I just had started watching wrestling. I recently figured out I start watching wrestling in the summer of 1985. I remember a guy, Michael Barczewski, showed me a wrestling magazine or a program for WrestleMania 1, and all I cared about it was that Cyndi Lauper was in it, so like I didn't care about
not even Mr. T?
Mr. T was cool, but like I don't remember watching the A-Team as much as the average kid, but I do remember watching MTV and liking MTV. So Cyndi Lauper was the big one. But I then saw Buddy Landell and Pez Watley on NWA, and I was really into NWA. But my little cousin Eddie, he liked the British Bulldogs. Then we watched WWF too. But right around the time I start watching wrestling, Terry Funk had Jimmy Hart as his manager and British Bulldogs. And then obviously Randy Macho Man Savage showed up. They did the battle for Randy Savage with all the managers. So that angle where all the managers were vying for one guy really got him over with Kid Rob, because I was just like, wow, I'm just a little kid. I don't really understand this. But this guy's got to be good, since he's got like Freddie Blassie and Mr. Fuji and Jimmy Hart and Bobby Heenan, all the managers. And then like they introduced Elizabeth. So that was completely new to me, because we had Baby Doll and Tully in the other promotion too. But, you know, this girl was dressed up like a pageant queen, so it was just kind of different to me. But, oh, and he did cool shit. Like the axe handle off the top onto Jose Luis Rivera, the big elbow, you know, all the little moves that he would do. You know, I just immediately liked him. And it's a weird thing, because I didn't look at him as a small guy. Like, he was a really small guy for WWF, but, like, I never looked at him because he had such a big, dynamic personality. But he was a deceptively smaller guy.
See, I kind of have you beat. Luckily, living in Atlanta, Joe Pedicino's block started around Mother's Day, 85. So that'd been May. And the key, not really the key, but the lead-in show for his block coming off of World Championship Wrestling on TBS when the first show first started was Memphis. Memphis was the first show. Yeah. So I'm 6 years old, and I'm flipping channels on my TV, which, yeah, I had TV at 6 years old in 1985. It wasn't a good TV, but it was a TV. It was at least color. And my brothers had black and white.
Black and white.
Yeah. So I just remember finding the more wrestling. I was like, what is this? And I was like, okay, this is Memphis. Now, Memphis had aired in Atlanta off and on for a year. They got on Atlanta TV in 84 because they had Lawler was working on Atlanta television at the time. Austin Idol had worked in Atlanta at the time. But they had Tommy Rich as a regular. So they figured, you know, we got Tommy Rich. Maybe let's try and get a slot in Atlanta. So they got a slot in Atlanta, but Ole got pissed off. Oh, God damn it. You know, this isn't competition, blah, blah, blah. And kind of was got them kicked off in a way of another station. But they kept finding their way back around. And then they got on, they got hooked up with Ole when he went on his own, which is funny. And you had the merger of Crockett, Memphis, and Ole's group, which lasted all of a couple weeks. But still, Ole worked with Memphis for a while. So you had Memphis guys in his territory. Savage never worked in Atlanta then, though. But so fast forward a few months, and then now Memphis is on Joe Pedicino's new block. And I'm like, okay, this is Memphis wrestling. Okay. And I see Savage. And this is a time where he had turned heel on Lawler and was with Tux Newman, Jeff Walton. And he was a complete fucking maniac in that run. I mean, he's on top. He's standing on top of the desk. He's threatening Lance Russell. I mean, you look at him and he's like completely out of his fucking mind on drugs. That's what you think by watching him. I mean, he is psychotic. And it's just like, wow, at 6 years old, I was like, wow, who is this guy? You know, he had this cool look. He had the hair. He had the beard. He wore these crazy robes. I mean, he stood out.
And he had the computer printout. He had, he always had extra stuff to make you notice him.
And yeah, exactly. And Tux Newman was his manager and blah, 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 blah. And he had Leaping Lanny in his suit of armor and all that shit. And then, and then he goes to WWF, like you said. And when you started seeing him, is it right when he really starts, you know, in the promotion? And it's like you watch WWF television and, you know, Snuka had been there and done all his shit and blah, blah, blah. But there was nobody that was like Savage in that promotion or had been in that promotion. And like you said, they do the whole manager battle, and that made him still seem really fucking important. That all these managers are fighting for him, and this is the first of that angle in WWF, where all the managers are vying for his services, and then he picks a woman, Miss Elizabeth, And it's like, holy shit, this is a game changer. You know, and then Elizabeth looking like she looked. I mean, you'd never see anything like that in WWF before either. And, you know, that early run, Elizabeth was kind of a heelish character in a way. She, you know, changed as time went along. But that dynamic was like, wow, this is hip right here. This is some hip shit that they got out there with Savage. And you could just tell that this guy was going to be a big-time star.
Yeah, like the dick boyfriend thing, like, you know, it's obviously relatable to human beings and cinema and everything else. You know, in the movies, you know, every in the 80s in particular, so many dickhead dudes who were being shitty to their girlfriends in the movies and stuff. And it's like, it just, you know, same playbook, you know, it's like in real life, like there's fucking shitty boyfriends. So there you go.
But he wasn't like that at first, though. That's the thing that started to go into when 86, that's when it really started. When the George Animal Steel angle started.
Yeah, they'd have him on that TNT and he'd kind of start bossing around. Like, why are you talking to her? Talk to me. You know, even with Mean Gene, the announcers are very important. Like Mean Gene in particular would be like trying to talk to her and he wouldn't let. So like you see his insecurity immediately and then like go to the side, you know, and you know, all those promos. They did a Macho Man DVD a while ago and a lot of those promos are all on there in succession, like little bits and pieces of them. They're all so good. So that's good. But Tux Newman, too, to circle back to him, I have every edition of Memphis TV from 85 on MP4, and I really like it. Like, I knew I would like it. Like, you don't think 85 Memphis is, like, the peak Memphis, but, like, I really enjoy 1985 Memphis because, again, you're right, Tux Newman – like when Jimmy Hart leaves and the narrative is, oh, Jimmy Hart left and they just had all these shittier managers. Tux Newman was fucking great. Like, I don't like lumping him in with the was the fake Jimmy Hart. Like, there was a lot of other managers who were not, you know, they were all lesser than even Tux Newman. But Tux Newman brought a fresh approach. It was like that sports agent type thing. He could talk. He was entertaining. Like, I really like Tux Newman. Jeff Walton, I didn't know that name until probably 5 or 6 years ago. It's one of those things like Larry Rivera on XPW, where like, oh, that's Pat Hoed. Oh, what the fuck is that? You know, like how's anyone supposed to know? Oh, but like obviously like observer readers, like shit, I'm an observer reader that had a cup of coffee in wrestling. So like I get that it happens. But like it's just funny where we're like, oh, Jeff Walton. It's like, well, I don't know who that is. But you know, Tux Newman was fucking awesome, is what I'm trying to, you know, circle around to say here. But he was really good. If anyone looks Tux Newman up on YouTube, you'll be surprisingly entertained because it's good stuff.
And his run only lasted about 4 months. Because once Savage leaves, he phases out.
4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a time. A lot of these guys that we look back on so glowingly with stars in our eyes, like, it's like a lot of them just had like a couple month runs. You know what I mean? It's just like, I kind of liked it that way.
Yeah.
You know? But
it works. Sometimes it works. Just moves
faster. Yeah. Move kind of faster. I mean, it moves slower in ways, but also kind of move faster in ways. Like, look at Killer Khan in 1988, you know, or 87. Like, I look back at that like it was years. It was like fucking 6 months. But, you know, when you're kids, stuff maybe goes a little slower, I suppose.
All right, so before we get heavy into WWF, let's circle back. Okay, so when you got a chance to watch Savage in ICW, what were your thoughts on him in that promotion in the early 80s?
I got to watch Savage in ICW in 1991. Because one of the local videotape distributors had ICW tapes, and I didn't know they were ICW tapes, but they were like wrestling tapes. And Leapin' Lanny was the commentator over them, and you know, had like Ron Garvin and Macho Man. And I didn't like it at the times, it looked so low rent. I was a kid, or I don't know, I was a kid, I was what, 12, 13, but like, regardless, I still was like, this is a little weird. But I liked it because it was wrestling. You know what I mean? I liked any wrestling. So I'm like, okay, I'm still going to watch this. But I wasn't as it didn't hit me as hard. And I didn't really like it. Like, I've watched more of it now, and I appreciate it. I love the low rent stuff. I love all the early Macho Man stuff. but at the time I didn't appreciate it. I did appreciate when I first saw him in Memphis, though. Like coming off the chicken wire cage on the Savage and missing, or on the Lawler and missing the elbow, and Jerry Lawler's dad is dead. Like all those promos he was doing were fucking nuts. You're right. Like he was insane. And like when he came out and interrupted the show and they had the piece of computer, they Macho Man Rules or whatever, Jerry Lawler, and you know, all that crazy shit they were doing on the studio wrestling TV show that Memphis had was so good. And like him and Lanny Poffo, who was integral to the whole thing too. And I like Lanny more than the average bear. I thought he was great. Lanny and Macho Man against the Rock and Roll was a couple pair of matches that were on the Wrestling Gold DVDs that I bought in early 2000, 2001. And those were both superb tag team matches. And those are from 1984.
Yeah, Memphis.
Both of those matches. Yeah, if you're a young wrestler and you're getting into wrestling and you want to watch a good tag team match, that one might not be at the top of many people's list, but it's a top
pile
of mine.
Driver
it's
through the table.
Great. Oh yeah, the pile driver through the table is so emphatic. But then the rematch, even when they try it again, it gets reversed or whatever. And just Ricky Morton selling, Macho Man staying on the opponent, you know, both teams cutting the ring off. Lanny Poffo fucking held his own, you know.
Lanny was a good damn worker. Really good.
Yeah, he was very good. I was really impressed with old Lanny. Now, I honestly, everyone says, oh, Lanny Poffo, that was such a curse that he was Macho Man's brother because of the talent. I'm opposite where I think if – I don't think it was – or no, everyone says Randy Savage got Poffo everywhere, but I think it was a curse.
He didn't get Poffo in the Mid-South.
Yeah, that's true. But like he got him like, hey, I'm going to come in, but I want my wife and brother too. Okay, sure. Come to WWF. And then he went there and then he got the gorgeous Jory $1 million WCW contract.
Yeah.
Which is good. But like, honestly, Lanny Poffo deserved a little bigger shove, I feel. And he never really got it. Particularly, I would have liked to see what the hell he would have done in late 90s WCW, just from like a curiosity factor. But you know, never happened, I guess. And he even got on steroids to do it. He was like, I went on 12 cc's of testosterone. I want to be on the show. Dyed my hair. But, you know, never happened.
Yeah,
doing gymnastics.
Yeah, I was like you. You know, I saw Savage in 85, you know, in Memphis in real time. But it wasn't until all those videos came out in the early 90s, Wrestling Gold, and the other one, was it the World's Greatest Wrestling Series or whatever it was? It had all the cartoonish video covers. And there was one for Savage in particular.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
I bought all those motherfuckers up because it had old shit that I was like never seen before from Memphis and Mid-South and the like. And Savage is prominently featured on that stuff. I'm like, holy shit, the cage match with Lawler. You know, where Joe LaDuke climbs the cage and all that shit. I'm like, holy shit, this is just insane. And
it always annoys Wrestling Gold, by the way, where like the whole you listen to Meltzer and Cornette back when they were friends, and they're talking about this match on commentary on the Wrestling Gold, which is the only way to watch the Wrestling Gold, honestly.
It is.
They really learn a lot, despite what I'm about to say here. But like the whole time, Cornette just bitches about, and it's a cage, and you put up the cage because it's not like modern wrestling 24 years ago, by the way. It ain't like modern wrestling where the cage doesn't mean anything anymore. And then at the very end, fucking Joe LaDuke comes out, you know, climbs up the ring steps, climbs over the cage, and like, you know, he did exactly what Cornette said they didn't do back in the day. So it was kind of humorous. And see,
the thing is that these videos were coming out at the time where Savage in WWF was, you know, Macho King and doing the retired step. So you're seeing Savage 7 years earlier when he was, you know, younger and was just being this maniac on there. And that was like a cool touch for wrestling fans that may not have seen that before to see peak Savage here in Memphis and ICW.
Yeah, because you'd catch it in the magazines too. Like, if we didn't have the magazines, we wouldn't have known Savage was Poffo's. Well, I guess if you saw Memphis, you would have known. But, like, I wouldn't have known. So when I read the magazines, I'm like, uh-uh, one guy's named Savage, not Poffo. And then, of course, you read that, you know, Ole Anderson named Randy
On the poster, yeah, on that the pin up inside Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I'd never forget reading that for the first time. Like, holy shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like, oh, your son wrestles like a savage. So they just called him Randy Savage. It's funny because Lanny Poffo hates – Ole Anderson doesn't like Lanny and vice versa. There's a whole
– Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, devoted to it. And includes like Lanny Poffo. I'm sure I've gone over this on some bullshit podcast in the last 20 years, but I just remember like Lanny Poffo had such a fun, like Mr. Rogers-esque educational, like, wow, this guy's a real classy guy. Wow, what a nice guy. And then, you know, he comes across well, doesn't seem like he swears. Like, this is a more, you know, he's a more centered shoot interview. And then he's like, hey, Ole, how do you like my used pussy? And I'm like, oh no. He starts talking about how he dicked down Ole's lady that hangs out at the arena. So I was like, oh no. I was just fucking, I was like, what the fuck? I was just so shocking. And then he tells all the other lurid details. And I'm like, good Lord. But yeah, the Ole Anderson Poffo tie-in is fascinating because he did indeed name Randy.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to WF. All right, so Savage's first big angle is with George the Animal Steel. Now, the thing is, though, is, you know, with us not really, you know, well, you were up in Pennsylvania, so you might have. Well, it was mainly for Garden. Savage and Hogan had a Garden run at the end of 85 into 86 that doesn't really get talked about nationally until it hits the Aftermags 4 months later. That, you know, that they had this little series. So,
yeah, I don't think you're right. That his first real angle was with George Steele, but you're right. Like, the Hogan thing happened too, and he even beat him. Like, he beat Hogan, you know, in by count out or something in one of those. Cause I remember, yeah, the magazines talked about it. And indeed, my first PWI discussed that where, you know, Savage, you know, beat Hulk Hogan. And it's like, oh, wow. And it's just like, he had the run before Animal Steel, and then he had a run after Animal Steel. So it's kind of interesting. But, yeah, that first run, so right out the gate, like, let me pull up Cage Match here. So like,
okay, there was an angle, though. I remember now. There was an angle that aired in November where Hogan – you remember this now. Remember Hogan against Rusty Brooks.
Oh, of course, Rusty, my friend.
So Savage and Elizabeth show up before the match, and Savage had Elizabeth ask Hogan over the microphone why he doesn't wrestle anyone with credentials. And then after the match, Savage attacked Hogan, but Hogan cleared him from the ring. That was one I never saw on television. So I mean, it aired, but because we didn't really get WWF a lot this time, it was hit and miss. I didn't see this until the Coliseum video, Macho Man and Elizabeth, came out in 86. So that's how I saw this for the first time. So, I mean, people that had Championship Wrestling would have seen it.
Yeah, we had Wrestling Spotlight, All-American. Yeah, so I saw it because I remember Rusty, when I met Rusty, it was just so cool, you know, talking to Rusty Brooks and asking about, you know, we fought Andre and Hogan, all these, because he's just a bigger guy, you know, so... I'm being honest, I don't remember that being the particular Savage angle, but it makes perfect sense, you know, and there you go. That's all it took. That's how they used to do it back in the day. Kamala's having a squash match, has to have Andre show up in the aisle. That's your match. And then people would pay money to see it at the Hershey Park Arena. So, yeah, that's crazy.
It was just the hook of Savage having Elizabeth call Hogan out on his shit. You know, you ain't wrestling nobody. You know,
yeah, kind of speaks to what you were saying, or she was kind of heelish. I don't remember, but there you go. That's proof positive.
But yeah, so that was Savage's first, you know, TV deal. But George Animal Steel is the one that really kicks it off. And I mean, you're like, yeah, I mean, this is a style clash, this, that, and the other. But the story they told, you know, where George was infatuated with Elizabeth. Savage is this ogre who's so overprotective of Elizabeth, and George being George and all this other stuff. I mean, this angle went off and on for over a year. You know, they got that much mileage out of this angle.
Yeah, because I was about to say it predated him beating Tito, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Remember the Saturday Night's main event, the one in Tampa. The one where, you know, they're in the water park.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that, you know, I mean, it started there in that time period. And then it goes a full year, but, you know, they go on and off from it. But it goes a full fucking year and a half, you know, with those two.
Yeah, three, yeah. So it's, yeah, I forgot about that. But, yeah, because he had a house show run with Tito at Boston Garden. But
yeah, we'll get into that. We're about to get into that, too.
Had a random match with, you know, Ricky Steamboat before, like in late 85, like way before it really started. So, you know, there's these matches that happen in a vacuum. He'd have matches with Quick Draw, Rick McGraw, and like a lot of the undercard people on the house shows to start off with. But then you're right, went right to Hogan, which tells you, you know, George Scott or whomever was booking.
Still George Scott.
Yeah, so like clearly, you know, big heart eyes for Randy Savage at the time. And, you know, he did draw money with Hogan. So they couldn't hurt Savage to lose some of those matches, win one by count out, and then move on to the next thing. But yeah, you know, the Macho Man, George the Animal. As a kid, I know my sister fucking loved that angle. Like, she hated wrestling, but like, she thought that was good. So, like, cool.
Well, I mean, it's that, you know,
very
soap opera. This ugly guy has the hots for this beautiful girl who's, you know, got a boyfriend who's a douchebag, you know, and you see these movies and story TV shows like this, where sometimes the girl leaves the guy and goes for the ugly guy.
Yeah, like Karate Kid Part 2.
Well,
how dare I besmirch the beautiful face of Ralph Macchio.
I know, right? Anyway. Danielson is not ugly, my friend. But
he's a wonderful matinee idol. I remember then after Animal Steel, he wins the thing with Tito and the famous finish where he yanks the shit out of his tights and goes for a swing and the guy ducks and then picks him up with the atomic drop and Macho Man just pops him in the head. 1, 2, 3, throws it out. Also, that kind of started the Danny Davis referee heel.
Year-long build for that, yes.
Yeah, so these things, you know, they some tender love and care put into a lot of this stuff. So there you go. There's that.
All right, before we get into Tito, okay, I want to ask you this. How important do you think it was that Jesse Ventura put like his stamp of approval on Savage and
made team.
And his they tag partner.
They were a cool tag team. As a kid, I thought they were really a good. I thought like both of them were loud as fuck. It was the MTV generation. They had the color. They were not on. They were like a flashier version of Hammer Valentine and fucking Beefcake. I'm surprised they even had those two teams concurrently. That's why maybe one went away pretty quick. Because, you know, it's the same thing, you know, it's the kind of like the Adonis Ventura dynamic, except with Macho Man. I don't think they had that long. They probably had a few weeks and then Jesse just left wrestling. But I agree with you, like all those body shops were like he'd be talking about Macho Man. And even in the it's like when Rick Rude first showed up where Jesse be like, oh, I'm the body, but this guy's even bigger. He's got more cut up than I am, you know, and that was the stamp and that meant a lot. So you're right. Good call on that, because I would have forgotten about that. But Jesse Ventura and Macho Man were another thing that was all over the magazines because they were picture friendly and louder than fuck. And, you know, it was a good deal for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that helped Savage get even more over was that stamp of approval by Jesse. And then he wins the IC title from Tito. And Tito, you know, had been champion for, at this point in time, about 8 months or so. You know, and it was time, and Savage gets the belt and, you know, just kicks off, you know, then. I mean, he has the rematches with Tito and this, that, and the other, and, you know, he's involved in other types of fit, but he doesn't have a major angle in this time period. You know, that's the thing that was kind of interesting to look back on in 86, so the early part of 86. Was, yeah, he didn't have this major angle, and he's a champion, other than George Steele, which, again, that's like coming and going. But it doesn't
like he's like Danny Spivey, or he's wrestling fucking, you know, Billy Jack Haynes, and just matches here and there, you're right.
You just look at, okay, look at the Garden. I mean, just take that, you know, working the guard. He's working Tito in April, no DQ. He works Tito in May in a no contest where Bruno was the referee. And then, you know, you come back in June where Savage and Adonis against Bruno and Tito. So he's hooked up with Tito for this the whole spring of 86 at Madison Square Garden. And then that leads to a steel cage in July. So you got four straight months where you got Savage hooked up with Tito, and then Adonis and Bruno's in the mix. That, I mean,
yeah, Bruno is absolutely in the mix. And it's funny, he doesn't really have an angle with him till December of 86. But
not a TV angle, but he's doing. But he does stuff at Boston Guard, I think, with Bruno, too.
Yeah, what do you call him? You louse. I'll kill you, you louse. He starts choking him. But yeah, you know what? Fuck it. That's not a bad thing. And I'm going to say something here that I just thought of as you're telling me about Tito. I think everyone talks about, when Hogan dropped a leg on Sheik, that was the big, you know, wrestling, the sports entertainment, gaga, WWF moment. I think Savage beating Tito is almost equivalent, because Savage was like the first sports entertainment IC champ, in my opinion. Like, he was Entertainment Tonight. He was WWF TNT. He was a guy who was flashy looking. He wasn't just your rudimentary journeyman, you know, I'm going to have a good matchup with my tights and boots guy. Like, he really was louder than the spotlight. So, like, when he won it, you know, he lost it to Steamboat. I get it. But then Honky, and then you look at everyone, Honky onward, they're all just pretty much bigger characters in ways. So,
you want to hear something wild? This is wild. Okay. Savage does not have a match at Madison Square Garden from the July show until the next February. So he goes August, September, October, November, December, and January. 6 months without having a match at Madison Square Garden.
Well, that begs the question, did one of the Hogan matches not do well?
No, because they come off. Why? Went from Hogan to the Tito Bruno deal. That ran four straight months.
But not at – wait, did those matches happen at the Garden?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madison Square Garden. Now, I'm looking at Boston Garden. Him and Hogan have a run in Boston Garden.
In I recently downloaded all of the Boston Garden 1986 shows, and he is all over those.
Yeah.
He's a big Boston Garden guy.
May and June, and then our birthday – your 8th, my 7th, him and Adonis lost to Hogan and George Steele. So, no. But then, okay, after that match, okay, then him and Steele hook up in September. Then they do singles matches September, October, and then they go Steamboat in November. Yeah, Savage is on every Boston Garden show, basically, in 86, except for maybe a couple. And then him and Bruno hook up in 87 in January at Boston Garden. And that January, February, you know, I mean, so he's all over Boston Garden. But Madison Square Garden, he goes a long time without doing shows, which is so interesting. And it kind of makes you wonder if he's working. I guess he's got to be working another town those nights. And that's probably a thing that, you know, we should talk about is – they're running these split crews, you know, Savage and Intercontinental titles, a guy who would be the guy that was having probably the main event on a lot of the B shows where Hogan's not on, you know?
Yeah. And he's probably drawn really well. So they probably just went with that for some time too.
Yeah. 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 I'm looking at Spectrum now. All right. So him and Tito do their thing at the Spectrum. He has a match with Orndorff at the Spectrum. George Steele in July, doesn't work August, doesn't work September. He has Honky Tonk in October, Babyface Honky Tonk.
Wow.
And then Steamboat in November. So we get Savage Steamboat has matches in Boston and Philly in November, and they do the TV angle where Steamboat's out, so nothing in December, and then they come back when Steamboat's all right and come back to it in January, you know. So
when you fight Orndorff, is Orndorff bad at that time?
No, it's right before he turns.
See, that's one that I've never seen that match. Man, that sounds like a really good
June 28th. June 28th.
All right, I'll have to track it down. Spectrum.
Hogan and Bundy's the main event of that show.
I'm sure it was on our beloved Prism, so I got to go.
It definitely sure was. So, all right, so we get the gist of Savage in 86 and what's going on here. He's got various opponents, but mainly it's Tito, George Steele, Bruno's in the mix, you know, stuff like that. And then he starts his angle and the late fall with Ricky Steamboat.
Well, we forgot the Wrestling Classic, which I think.
Oh, was a God, good yeah. Show. Yes.
Because the end of 85, he has the wrestling. And I didn't see it because we didn't have the.
I didn't either. Viewer,
but I saw the end of it when they showed on the TV where all I remember him saying was, oh, there were 16 competitors and here's the end. And it was like Savage taking his trademark gigantic backdrop over the top from Junkyard Dog, and then Junkyard Dog won. But I was like, I used to think Battle Royals ended when you threw the guy out and then they had to count to 10 because of how that – because I thought the Wrestling Classic was a Battle Royal, not a tournament as a kid. So for years, I'm talking like way past I probably should have figured it out. I'm like, why do they count 10? But I remember then actually seeing that show. That show is one of my favorite WWE shows. I mean, maybe – some of the matches could have gone longer, sure. That show is comfort watching to me, like one of the Clash of the Champions that had 15 matches on it would be, where, okay, they're all not like 4.5-star classics, but they're all really competent, and they're all like dream matches that are guys that you really want to see wrestle each other. And some of them are first-time-only matches, you know, and only times people wrestled. But
Savage is not my kid.
Yeah, and it's good that it happened because, oh, it's got a loud fucking ring. Like, there's many superlatives I could speak about that show in Chicago. But
yeah, I remember renting it from my local video store when I was a kid, because I had never seen it before. And I was like, wow, this is cool. This is different. You know, and you seeing Savage and Steamboat for the first time. And like I said, Savage and Dynamite, that was a damn dream match right there. You know? And
yeah, I like Bob more than the big event. I always put the big event and the Wrestling Classic next to each other just because they're both kind of sort of similar. But I'm with you. I really like the Wrestling Classic.
Yeah. So, yeah. And he lost in the finals to JYD and that. But still, the fact that he was in the finals of that tournament against JYD, who was the number 2 babyface in the company at that time. I mean, that shows you that what they were thinking about, you know, Savage and his potential.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those weird things. We didn't get into this, but we can now, I guess. Hillbilly Jim was the catalyst to all of this shit. Like,
yeah,
Hillbilly Jim is like, hey, Jimmy Hart, you know, I'm here at WWF, and it's really cool, and you know, they're asking about you, and then Jimmy goes, and then, you know, Jimmy's the guy who contacts fucking, you know, Plowboy Frazier and then Randy Savage, you know, and then, you know, Savage meets with Jimmy Hart at a hotel when they're somewhere down near Memphis and, or somewhere, I don't remember where, but like, I remember it was a very covert meeting where Jimmy's like, no, you really should meet with this Mac Man, you know, he's a good guy, whatever. So then all that shit happens, and then, you know, Macho Man gets the call, but it seems not only did they recruit Macho, but they really sought. It's so funny because he was an outlaw.
He was like, blackballed, basically.
Yes, they sought after an outlaw and really, you know, acquiesced to his demands because you got Liz and Lanny Papa.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, too, that, you know, we didn't talk about was, you know, ICW. I mean, they were the outlaws of the outlaws, but still, a lot of those guys ended up getting work. You know, Orton Jr., Bob Roode, Pez Watley, Lanny. I mean, his own brother.
Wasn't Macho Man supposed to go to Mid-South? Ross told me that, I think.
It was talked about, but he went to Memphis, he did Memphis instead, which was the right call. Because of the big money angles in Memphis he could do with Lawler. You know, and stuff like that, playing off of the whole heat.
So there could have been an 84 Macho Man in Mid-South.
Think about that.
Who were the good guys in Mid-South in 84? Let's go.
Duggan, JYD, Magnum, Terry Taylor.
Oh, yeah, been good.
Rock and Rolls.
Yeah, all right.
Lanny.
Yeah, Leap and Lanny. You could have tore the house down with Lanny, Owen Bret Hart style. Yeah, that would have been interesting. But yeah, anyway, I wanted to go back. We could not talk about our beloved wrestling classic.
Real quick, you mentioned a big event. You know, Savage doesn't work that show. He's in Kansas City that night.
All right.
Going to what we were saying, he's working George Steele in Kansas City.
So he was a guy they anchored the B-shows with. All right.
Yeah.
Because Honky Tonk often claims he is the guy who really popularized the Intercontinental guy headlining shows.
That's not true.
Macho Man did.
Tito drew money. Tito and Valentine drew big money.
I forgot. I forgot. Look at me bypassing old Tito. But yeah, Tito, and I'm sure Morocco. I mean, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. But, all right, so Ricky Steamboat. Let's get Ricky Steamboat. I mean, that angle, you know, where he crushed his larynx. I mean, that was one of the definitive angles of that era right there. You know, the Bruno in the locker room, him and Bruno going at it. And that, you know, setting up their match in Boston and all that stuff, you know. I mean, that got Savage over in WF as being more of the out-of-control psychotic character.
Yeah, for sure. Because, like, you know, they did the TV match on Superstars, and it was good. But, like, the angle's what everyone remembers. And it was just like, and again, we were younger, so whatever. But it seems like angles resonated more in those days.
Well, they hammered it home. You know?
Like they did it. They hammered it home. They reshowed it at the end. They had Bruno choke fucking the guy that did the dastardly deed and call him a louse. And, you know, for weeks they'd have the guy updates from the hospital. And then he's with the speech therapist, you know, and all that shit.
Yeah,
like, to this day on Instagram, I saw a story where someone was doing the Ricky Steamboat voice therapist thing. And I sent it to my sister immediately. I'm like, dude, you remember when me and you would just laugh at this like for hours because we're a little pricks. But like, yeah, it's crazy that, you know, that was a very memorable deal. And then it all comes back to he's like, I accept your match. And then he comes back and he can talk again. And then they have the fucking greatest match of the fucking 80s in WWF. It's the fucking silver now.
And before we get to that, though, the Saturday Night's Main Event before WrestleMania is Savage and George Steele again. And that's the one where Elizabeth's in the lifeguard chair. And all that shit. And one of the coolest things, of that era to me on a WF show was Savage getting Elizabeth and trying to take her away. And then all of a sudden, as he's going, serious hits. And there's Steamboat out there. And Kobo goes completely fucking nuts because Steamboat's standing in his way and won't let him go to the back. And him and Elizabeth have to go back to the ring. I love that Saturday Night's Main Event. It's my favorite Saturday Night's Main Event of all time. And that was just a fantastic moment right there to help set up Mania.
See, I got to watch that. What was that, the 20-man Battle Royal?
That, correct, yes.
Well, I'm going to have to watch that one back. But yeah, the funny thing is, the thing I remember most about that Mania was his brother. Because it's when one of the first WWE Juice jobs.
Oh, yeah. Andre fucked him up.
Plan. Yeah. I remember that vividly. But yeah, so there was all that, and then it built to, oh, you know what? Another thing before WrestleMania that didn't air until after WrestleMania, I don't think, but all those fun 6-man tags on house shows.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, you know, I don't know if Savage is in both of them, but I remember there were two in particular I remember at the time. Hogan was in one, but then the one that most people talk about was Adonis, Harley, and Savage. Think about the working heels on that team against Steamboat, Piper, and JYD. And that's a fucking incredible match. Like, that's a really fucking good match.
February 23rd, 87 at the Garden, elimination match.
Yeah, that match is so fucking good. I love that match. And then, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't see it on the MSG, it was on Best of WF Volume 11 on Coliseum Video. That's where probably me and you saw it for the first time.
Yeah, I think it might have been on primetime also.
No. It was
one of them. I think there was one with maybe Hercules and Billy Jack and Hogan that was on primetime. I get them confused. But yeah, both of those. And by the way, wrestling promoters, please, more stuff like this. Like, look at that match. It's like three different angles squished into one match. A super match, if you will. You know what I mean? Where you have Dog and Harley on opposite, Piper and Adonis, and then Savage and Steamboat. Like, I love shit like that. Like, those people weren't necessarily interconnected, but they're fucking good guys and bad guys. And, you know, it's a mega match.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And, I mean, you can mix match the guys doing the job with the guys they're not feuding with, and it's not hurting the feud.
Yep. You know? I mean, if you even, you could even fucking put Quick Draw Rick McGraw in Piper's spot in that match, I'd still be interested.
You couldn't then. He's dead.
Oh, fuck. Well, in theory. Maybe Scott McGee. But, like, regardless, you put someone else in.
Okay, I'm looking at Barrio is on that show.
Yeah, put Barrio in the Macho Man spot. You know, but that shows you how big of a match that was. That's legitimately three feuds jammed. Like, that undercard probably sucked ass, but, like,
The other match on that card that would have been the headline match was Hart Foundation against Killer Bees. But you got
Which
Jake,
is another good one.
You got Jake and Bundy supporting it, Tito and Butch Reed. Those are the matches that have like angles.
Yeah, that's a good show. I thought it'd be leaner than that. Some of those shows are pretty questionable, but no, that's good.
The debut of Barry Darso and MSG is Smash against the Islanders. And you got Honky and Pedro Morales. Out by Jack Barrio, Coco Beware and Sika, and Paul Roma and Salvatore Bellomo.
I like that show. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to have to find it. That's a good fucking show. Okay. Yeah. Even Salvatore Bellomo. Fuck it. Like, wait, who did Sika wrestle?
Coco.
Coco?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm not
against
that.
That's your headbutt battle there.
Yeah, no doubt. Holy shit. One for the ages.
Okay, the one you're thinking about is March 7th in Boston. That aired on primetime. That was Hogan, Piper, and Billy Jack against Adonis, Orndorff, and Hercules.
Yeah, see, same thing, you know? Oh, I guess.
No, you're right. Hogan and Orndorff. And Piper and Adonis, yeah. And Billy Jack and Hercules. That's three angles.
I like that. Yeah, I like that kind of shit. More of that in wrestling would be good.
WrestleMania 3. The match of Ricky Steamboat. My brother bought the Coliseum video. There was only at that time when I was a kid, there were only two wrestling videotapes in my house that weren't taped off television. The pink copy of Starrcade 85, which is rare as shit, and I still have it, and WrestleMania 3. And I can't tell you how many times I watched that fucking show. Because, I mean, it was wrestling on video. I mean, other than going and renting videos at the store and watching TV, I mean, that's what I had if I wanted to watch wrestling. And that match is, you know, pretty much ingrained in my mind. You know, I could, you know, I don't know if I could still do it to this day, but back then I could go spot for spot in the match like I was Savage and Steamboat. You know, I mean, it was that memorable of a match, you know, of our generation, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's an underrated show. I think people look at it as a one-match show, and it's really not. Like, I think it's a really good show. Like, even the undercard, everything's solid, if not unspectacular. You know, I like that show. And that match, come on. I saw it in a high school gym, the Shamokin Era High School gym. We saw it at the big closed-circuit location, and they had that gymnasium rocking. I remember I was excited. I liked Hogan and Andre, too, but, like, I just remember that match had everybody going nuts. And Piper and Adonis we all really got into also.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, very fun show. And, again, not every match has to be a fucking 4 or 5-star match. You know, I mean, you got to have your variety on these shows. And, I mean, that was a fantastic show and a huge money-making show.
Like, we'll make more sense of this. Imagine if, like, Adrian Adonis gave Roddy Piper, like, 3 DDTs and Piper kicked out all of them. And then, like, Hercules and fucking Billy Jack Haynes had, like, you know, back suplexes off the top. They got kicked. Like, people remember Savage and Steamboat so much because it was the one match on the show that had near falls.
JYD and Harley sat down on the mat in Indian style and started delivering forearms to each other.
There you go. See, look at us, old men in clouds. But no, I love it. That's, you're right. Like, fuck, man. Like, I wish instead of hiring producers in wrestling for everyone to have, like, okay, guys, we're going to have the best match and steal the show every single match. How about, like, let's look at the overall show and how
every
to build...
match had an angle.
Yeah. So, like, it's a trip. But that I agree with you. And the funny thing is, when Harley hit JYD just with the fucking belly to belly and pinned him, we were like, what the fuck? But, like, fuck it, you know, everyone they're forward. I don't think I saw Harley do another belly to belly his whole career, but he did one that day and he won the fucking match. But yeah, that WrestleMania 3 is a good show, and obviously I don't know if there's anyone left on earth that watches wrestling who hasn't seen Steamboat and Savage, but
no, there's no one.
Yeah, I've actually seen people come around and say they don't like this match. It's, of course they fucking do, but like, it's such a good fucking match. It's excellent.
Is it as great as some people say it is? Oh, it's the greatest match, blah blah blah. No, it's not. But as far as,
see,
like,
my thing is, I would never have a problem with anyone saying it is.
No,
because
it's what they think. You know, it's their opinion.
It's a crowd. You hear the crowd, which is such an intangible that I think every amazing match needs to have that crowd just high up in the air, like, holy fuck, this is like an otherworldly experience. So, like, they had that. They had so many bells and whistles. And, of course, Ricky, you know, Ricky and I were in the same office. He would talk to me about, oh, of course he likes the Flair matches better because it was more organic and we didn't have to write it all out. Da, 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 da. I like Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage more than fucking any Ricky Steamboat Ric Flair match. Shoot me. Sorry. But, like, I really do. I like this match more. Like, Steamboat and Flair – from the one that was in Chicago, where he's in the green tights and he wins the belt, that comes close. But, you know,
what about New Orleans?
I don't like that match. I don't like the darkness of the arena. Like, I just think it went too long. Like, I'm against it. And I like the Music City Showdown match a whole lot. I could see people saying that's their favorite also. But
I mean,
I like some of the
understand
just too. Like, and then we're gonna just convert this into a fucking Ricky Steamboat Flair podcast now. But like, I like some of the '90s. Like the Spring Stampede '94 is a hell of a show, and I like the one they did on TV. But
here's the thing about Steamboat Savage.
Yes.
It's maybe the most influential match of his era, because you look at all the people that got into wrestling that basically said that match was one of the reasons why they got into wrestling. I mean, that tells a story right there of how important it was to our generation.
Yep. And the thing, another good thing about the match, it had that angle attached to it.
And George steals the ringside.
And if it happened now, people would be like, but he tried to kill him and they're doing wrestling. It's like, you know, I kind of get it. Like, in theory, they probably should have just tried to kill each other in this match. But that was what the cage match was. Remember they had that cage match in MSG, I think, and it was blood and everything. Like, that's what that match was for. But anyway.
It's Mania, you know, and it was exactly what it needed to be at WrestleMania. And it was a classic. A definite classic.
Yeah. Although, if there was juice all over Ricky Steamboat's white tights, it might have been a little cooler.
And you get a new champion. You get the payoff. You know, Steamboat win the championship. Savage held the belt for over a year. So he had his run, and it was time to, you know, move on to Ricky. Little did they know what was going to happen with Ricky, you know, and, you know, wanting to get Bonnie pregnant. But,
fucking crazy. When he lost, I just remember being, like, so dumbstruck. Like, it's like, what? Honky Tonk Man?
Yeah, well, you're supposed to be Butch Reed.
Yeah, I know.
But, I mean, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it was just so out of the blue because we just spent all this time, you know, Steamboat winning this belt. He gets the belt and loses it 2 months later. What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. And then disappears.
That was wild. Yeah, it's gone.
So, Honky
Tonk. Gone.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. He showed back up at the Royal Rumble. Like, oh, there he is. And then, like... Then he was in the tournament the next year, and we all figured, oh, he's going to have a match with Macho again in the tournament. And he lost to Hammer Valentine. It's like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I wonder now, Steamboat doesn't leave. Do we even get the Savage babyface turn when we get it? Because Steamboat's still the champion. Who knows who he would be programmed against? But the thing is that, you know, Steamboat's gone. Honky needs an opponent. Let's turn Macho.
Yeah, I guess that is what they did, didn't they?
Yeah, that's basically what happened. Yeah, because, you know, if you remember, when Honky won the belt, the first person to congratulate him was Macho in the dressing room, you know, with the champagne bath. And then it's not but, you know, a month or so later that we get the angle that leads to Macho turning babyface. And it was time. The fans were cheering him. I mean, they pretty much had to do it anyway. So I guess that, you know, Steamboat leaving was perfect timing for them to go that direction. But,
well, didn't they also do a bunch of Jake Savage bad guy matches and people kind of, they probably figured then too, like,
well, Jake, you know. I mean, Jake had done some with other people, and that's why they turned him baby, because, you know, he had different, you know, he had that run with Bundy and he did stuff with other people, and they were cheering him over Hogan when they had their matches.
Because remember, they did have a Saturday Night Main Event match where they were both bad guys, though, right?
Something like that,
right?
Yeah.
I remember that was the one where Mean Gene was in the bathroom with Jake and his snake, and they're like in the showers. And I just remember that was a really good, like, that's one of my favorite matches.
So Jake and Steamboat was May. All right. And then Jake and Steamboat was September. And then Jake and Randy was November. Yeah. The Los Angeles one. That's right.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
I like that one.
And that's where Jake got, you know, was getting heavily cheered. And another, you know, deal that they were saw they had to turn this guy babyface because the fans were cheering him. So, you know, so you do.
Yeah,
so,
that was crazy after I just said I like Steamboat Savage more than Steamboat Flair. Jake might be my favorite Savage opponent. So, like, this is the infancy of it. This is the first time they wrestle, probably.
But, yeah, like, you know, they don't come back to it for a while, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a they. And, like, I don't even think it's in the top fucking 25 cage match, but that match they had at this Tuesday in Texas is fucking great. Like,
yeah,
it's a good match.
Yeah, and which we'll get into that as we go along. But, yeah, so you look, Summer 87, Savage still doing house show match with Hogan. They would go in, like, new markets, and Savage and Hogan would be, like, house show main event. So they were still doing that then, and then now we get babyface turn. So now Savage is babyface, but the thing is that he's still Macho Man Randy Savage, and it doesn't really get going hard until they do the angle with Elizabeth on Saturday Night's Main Event, where she's begging and pleading Honky and the Hart Foundation not to bash him over the fucking head with the guitar, and they do it anyway. And, yeah, I mean, a hot, hot fucking angle.
Yeah, I was
in Hershey, Pennsylvania, no less.
Yeah, when I came into school the day, I remember everyone was talking about it. And I was so fucking mad because it was, like, the coolest angle when it showed up on the TV. And I just remember, like, Sika wrestled Hulk Hogan and everyone was...
Well, Hogan's part of the angle because Elizabeth went to go get Hogan to make the save. And then they make the save and then... Savage and Hogan shake hands for the first time.
Yeah, and like all those dickheads were doing the fucking handshake on the playground. Yeah, man, that was a big thing. And I couldn't believe in hindsight, me little super wrestling fan with all the magazines at the time, I couldn't believe I missed it. I don't even know. I don't think I knew the show was happening, but yeah, it was a big deal.
And the best part about that was at the end of that Saturday Night's Main Event, they played a video of all that happening to Tammy Wynette's Stand By Your Man. That was classic.
Of course they did. And like, we'll just say it. Honky was a good ass opponent for fucking Savage too. And I know Honky said both good and bad about Randy, but like they were very good opponents. And Honky's another one who I have completely done a 180 on. Whereas I was like, Honky Tonk Man. Yeah, it was kitsch. It was cool. Whatever. It worked for what it was. But I love Honky Tonk Man now. I wish like a million more wrestlers were like Honky Tonk Man now. Like, he's fucking great. Like, he didn't do anything cool. Like, it was awesome. Like, he was such a good bad guy. You know, and then those Savage matches, they're probably my favorite Honky Tonk Man.
Again, he wasn't a great worker, but as far as, wrestler per se, but he was a damn good worker. He was a heel, damn good heel character worker, where he used his gimmick and, shortcuts and all that stuff and got the matches over. And that's, that was effective.
Yeah.
Again,
not
everything has to be a classic match.
Yeah. He knew and he's a guy who drew fucking money.
Yep.
He drew a lot of money. He was another. They've had him wrestle Hogan at Long Island, I think. So, yeah, it was good.
So out of this, the Savage deal with the Hart Foundation, on the next Saturday's main event, we get him and Brett in a singles match.
Unfucking believable match. Probably top five Macho Man match for me. I was looking at that on Cage Match earlier, and I couldn't find it. I was going to fucking scream to high heaven about how dumb people in Cage Match. But no, it's number seven. Like, I missed it. But it's very good. It's fucking excellent. There's so many. I remember I clipped that one up a couple months ago. I probably clip it up every year at one point. But, like, there's, like, a fucking Randy Savage, like, Irish whip spot where he's trying to Irish whip Brett into the corner. And they do, like, a double reverse. And then he misses a elbow into the corner very last minute. Like, that's a match where details are just so, so good. It's my favorite. Bret Hart, Randy Savage. And I mean, the match we talked about earlier, wasn't it Bret Hart, Randy Savage, where Honky and the angle happened? That was, wasn't
no, it was Randy and Honky.
Oh, okay. Well,
but Hart Foundation came out at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This match is playing off that whole deal.
Off of that, okay. But this was really good. This is one of those matches no one really seemingly talked about till more recently, or at least the last 20 years, I'll say. I thought we could say that now as old guys. We're like, more recently, the last 20 years. But, like, broad stroke there. But it's so good. It's so good. Like, I'm looking at what Cage Match. Like, okay, they have Bockwinkle Savage one above it on Cage Match.
That was a hell of a match. Bockwinkle Savage.
When I knew that match happened and was on tape, I was so excited. It was very good. It ain't a top 10 Randy Savage match to me, though. And I love
Bockwinkle. No, I agree. But it was a damn good match. But I agree. It's not top 10.
Yeah, I love Bockwinkle more than like 99% of the rest of humanity. The six man, I have no problem with people saying they like that one more than Brett Savage. Savage Flair Mania, I liked it a whole lot. I don't think it was better than Brett and Savage on the Saturday Night Main Event. Warrior match was good, but it had that stupid fucking five elbows thing. So I don't think that is better than Savage. And then they have Royal Rumble 92, which don't fucking count.
Shouldn't even count.
Yeah, they had Savage Steamboat. But yeah, man, that Brett Randy Savage match was fucking class.
I tell you another thing too, though. We had a great like fucking 80s moment before that match, if you remember. Brian Bosworth was at the show. And they showed him getting the front row seat. Yeah, because it was in fucking Seattle. And the Boz was there. And this is the Boz when he was the Boz, And to have the Boz at a WF event this time, I mean, that's fucking cool.
Dude, I love how, like, certain people, I'm going to get a time machine. And if I had a time machine, I would prevent COVID. Or, like, if I had a time machine, God damn it, there'd be better security on, September 10th. Me and you, like, if we had a time machine, fucking we'd convince Bosworth in 88 just to go into wrestling. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my God. Bosworth. Oh, I know you probably like Bosworth.
Love
as much as
him.
I get.
I had his poster on my wall.
Posters all over the
Wizard of Boz,
place.
Baby.
I had the cooler cousin who watched more football than I did, even when Bosworth was in Oklahoma. So, like, Bosworth, I didn't like football. I liked Brian Bosworth.
And well, he transcended football.
He was so fucking cool, and he looked so fucking cool on his show, too. He looked like more of a wrestler than like even
Sting took his haircut from fucking Bosworth.
Yeah, and the old New Breed too. Yeah, we all had those stupid ass spiked haircuts.
And when Starting Lineup, came out in '88, I remember seeing the Bosworth figure on the shelves, and I was like, God damn, I gotta get this because it had the haircut.
Yeah, I like this 30 for 30. Yeah, oh, yeah. 30 for 30 front. good. I love Bosworth. I'm glad you brought him up. That because that was Bundy Hogan too, if I remember. Because I think they showed Bosworth there too.
Yeah,
I kept thinking Bos was going to rail and body slam Bundy. And
he should have.
That is so cool. Yeah, he should.
And he played it. I mean, you would think he would have gotten the wrestling because he played Oklahoma. You know, Dr. Def C. Williams and shit. You know, hell, he's Oklahoma football player. Of course, he's going to get in the wrestling. That's what they do.
Oh well, this is. Same thing, fucking, oh, God. Who is the guy that was in USWA?
Marcus Dupree.
Marcus Dupree just did Wolfie D's podcast, and you should listen to it.
Wow.
He talks about getting into it because Jim Ross and Dr. Death, and he said that, like, I don't think he got into wrestling in the 80s that I remember, but
no,
like, he talks about...
In the 90s.
He talks about getting into it with them, so, like... I just think about that connection, and then you just think, fuck, man, Boss is right there, too, you know? But nah, not to be.
Yeah.
Because I know Jim Ross is really good friends with them now.
Oh, God, yeah. With them then. Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, they were all tight.
Cool.
So, anyway, so...
Man, can imagine Mid-South continued, and the oil crisis don't happen, and, like, Brian Bosworth beats the Big Bubba Roger, and they never sell UWF, and, like, UWF takes over. Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
Fantasy booking that you only get here on the show.
Yeah. All right, so, you know, as 87 ends and going to 88, I mean, Savage and Hogan really don't have the relationship tight yet, but, you know, we get in 88 and we're going to Mania 4 in the tournament, and, you know, Hogan and Andre had their, you know, the match at the big event and this, that, and the other, so titles on the line, it's vacant. Hogan and Andre are wrestling each other at Mania 4, and... It got out in the magazine, and we talked about this on Between the Sheets recently. WF Magazine reported by mistake that Savage is going to win a title before the tournament actually took place. And they got out there. You know, the people saw it, and there was really nothing they could do then. But, I mean, you look at it then, as a fan then, you kind of – I mean, I was one of them. You had to think Savage was going to be the guy to win this thing because – he was the next top baby face. But there's the thing. The plan was for DiBiase to win it. They switched. They switched plans.
Well, you know who I thought was going to win it?
Who? Bigelow?
Bam Bam. Yeah. And, like, this was the first pay-per-view my family bought. It was only because I like Bam Bam Bigelow. I was like, oh, man. So this is one, like, your WrestleMania 3 that you guys had. Like, we got to... I don't know. This is the first one we bought, but it's also the first one where we had a VCR in the house.
Uh-huh.
So we were able to tape it. This was the show that I watched 1,000,000 times. And you think, oh, God, what a horrible fate. You watched WrestleMania 4 that many times. But I liked WrestleMania 4 until I bought Dave Meltzer's paper. Yeah, until I got Meltzer's paper, I thought it was a fun show. And then, like, I was like, oh, I guess it sucked. But, like, swear to God, like... Even now, I will go back and I will lovingly watch my WrestleMania fucking 4 and I'll enjoy it for what it is and it's fine. But I wish there was better crowd heat, though. I will say that. Like, crowd heat really does invest me in a show or not. And, man, it was pretty bad.
It was a sold show in Atlantic City. So, yeah. No crowd heat.
But I thought five had a little bit better heat than 4. But, like, 4 also had longer matches.
Well,
like,
5 had the hot angle. I mean, the 5 had the angles. You know, it was going to be hotter. I mean, this is a tournament show, so I kind of get that. But, yeah.
But I like WrestleMania 4, the Macho Man with all the different color tights and, you know, the Butch Reed. And then he had One Man Gang and Hammer Valentine and... Ultimately, DiBiase, you know, and he busted ass on that show. He probably wrestled 45 minutes on that day.
Yeah, and it was the right decision in the end. I mean, DiBiase is champion. I mean, okay, it would have made, you know, it would have made sense from the story perspective and everything. But Savage had to win that thing. He had to. It was his time to get the ball and to run with it. And, yeah, I mean, so then, you know, now we have Savage as champion, you know, having these rematches with DiBiase and, you know, the cage match at the Garden where, you know, the fan gets up there and DiBiase has to hit the fan and, you know, all this other stuff. And, of course, the Mega Powers gets hot and heavy. You're building up the SummerSlam where you got the Mega Powers against the Mega Bucks. I mean, what were your memories of that whole deal at that time?
I like Macho Man as champion just because it was fucking different. And I liked it because, like, you could have a big feature match against Haku, and it would be cool to me, or Bad News Allen, and it'd be cool, or, you know, Killer Khan, I think, even got a shot. I liked heel Macho, or babyface good guy, world champion Macho Man, like I said, just because it was different. You know, Hogan was looming around, but, oh, Big Boss Man debuted. You know, One Man Gang was there. Andre the Giant was an opponent. So it was a whole litany of different guys for Macho Man. And, like, he was not your superhero champion like Hogan was. He could just fight from underneath against all these guys. And, like, in hindsight, it really worked. I don't remember how well it drew or not, but, like, I liked it. I liked him as a champ because it was different. And then, like, when he turned – or when he was starting to turn, you know, I remember we bought tickets for Hershey Arena because he was going to wrestle the Ultimate Warrior. And I'm like, oh my God, good guy match at Hershey around January or of, 1989. I was like, oh shit, angle alert now. But like at the time, I'm just like, oh, it's going to be fine. But, long story short, I really liked it. I thought Macho Man was a good, I liked all his outfits. Like, he had the long tights, and his outfits were ridiculous, where, like, he would wear, like, all these cool shirts with the pants, and, like, I sound like I'm, like, a fashion designer over here. But
he was all about that shit, man. Always had, you know, he would go for a while wearing, you know, similar stuff, and then he would switch it up.
Yeah, he was dubbed a very miserly guy, but he absolutely reinvested.
Well, his dad was the miser.
Yes, he was the character. But like, I swear to God, like this guy, he reinvested a lot of that money that he didn't spend on hotels for him and Liz on fucking gear, and it's cool. And you remember that kind of shit. And he in that era of the sparkly outfits and the bright colors, it was fucking perfect fit for Randy Macho Man Savage in 88, 89, 90, 91.
What about SummerSlam 88, the match? The Mega Powers, Mega Bucks, Jesse is the referee, Elizabeth showing off her itsy bitsy teeny weeny polka dot bikini, which is just a red bathing suit. I mean, what about that match?
I don't remember much about SummerSlam 88 except for Warrior defeating everyone at school. Yeah, it's all we cared about at school the next day. We didn't care about Miss Elizabeth's bikini. We were like, wow, Warrior, and all pounding each other's chests. And he fucked up Macho or Honky's day. And Honky Tonk was finally defeated. So, like, that when I think about SummerSlam 88, I think about the opener. And then I think about Warrior. And then, like, kind of the main event. Kind of just how much DiBiase got nuked. I like the foot on the throat elbow. Like, that was cool. And then the Jesse Ventura angle going into it was pretty good, too. And, yeah, I liked it, but not the most memorable aspect of the Savage run.
So, all right, so we get into the fall, and yeah, this is when Boss Man gets elevated. This is when Akeem gets elevated. You know, the One Man Gang and his new gimmick, and the Twin Towers, and they're feuding with the Mega Powers, and we get Survivor Series 88, where everything really starts getting going, and the Mega Powers have kind of a little tiff in the ring, and Savage walks out, and this, that, and the other. I mean, that was a big thing and a big part of the upcoming story at the time, and it was interesting to watch because you could tell if you were, you know, a astute wrestling fan, and even I guess I was at age 9 then, okay, Savage is going to turn on this guy, but it's just a matter of when it's going to happen because they got back together again and whatever. They really didn't break up, but, you know, everything was okay. And Savage was having his matches against Bad News at the time. He started that feud. So you had that feud going on, and Hogan's still fucking working Boss Man and blah, 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 blah. So you think, okay, you know, everything's going to be all cool. But, and Royal Rumble happens. And then, you know, we get the elimination at Royal Rumble. And it's like, oh, shit, you know, now this shit's really getting going. So, and then, of course, that leads to the main event in February, where everything breaks down against the Twin Towers, Savage turns, we have the hilariously insane Hogan Elizabeth backstage shit, are we live, stuff like that. I mean, just total insanity. I mean... your memories of the breakdown of the Mega Powers.
is she going to live, Doctor? Like, don't get me wrong. Elizabeth took the craziest bump of all time from Macho Man. Like, it looked fucking horrific. But, like, all that melodrama in the back, is she going to live? Meanwhile, Akeem almost dies when fucking Boss Man posts too early on the double splash and he goes fucking careening out of the ring head first. And then, you know, all of that shit. And it's cool to see that they literally started it in November and they were able to take it week to week to week to week to week, month to month, you know, that long until, you know, early February, the Friday night main event. And again, it was a good angle. And then, you know, that was the promos where Macho Man was just incensed. And it just led to the WrestleMania 5. And, you know, we ran over the Bad News Brown feud. But that's the one where I famously was told I couldn't watch wrestling for a week when I asked my mom what doing favors for Elizabeth meant.
The Bad News feud was something because he was cutting these promos and they were like pretty wild for the time. And you get the Harlem Street fights and this, that, and the other. I mean, it's a different WWF title feud, unlike any other at the time.
Yeah, that thing where he put his hands on Jack Tunney after he said that, he was getting favors from Elizabeth. I just remember that was a heavier angle watching it now than it was when I was a kid. I was like, holy shit. But yeah, that was a good thing. And I know, you know, Bad News said he had to kick the shit out of Randy on occasion because he got a little too fired up. But I thought they were good opponents. I thought Savage was exactly the kind of guy Bad News at that stage of his career should have been wrestling. And, you know, I thought they had good, really good matches and a good feud. And yeah, I'm sure they drew pretty good money as well.
It's one of those that you wish they would have had like a big match, a high profile match. That we could have had, you know, on a Saturday's Main Event or even a pay-per-view, whatever. Just a big match that we could go to. And we got the house show matches from different places, but it'd been nice if they would have had like a Harlem Street fight on Main Event or something. But sadly,
yeah, the time I went to see Warrior and Macho Man on the undercard, it was Hogan and Bad News. So, you know, on that Saturday Night Main Event taping I went to, I remember it was crazy because, Chris, I actually saw the ads for Hershey Arena on the TV this time. And it's like Jake against Andre, Hogan against Bad News, Ultimate Warrior against Randy Macho Man Savage. I'm like, oh my God, like this is the fucking most loaded show of all time. I'm like, we gotta go. And then like we got there and like every ticket was sold and we got SRO tickets and we had to stand, my poor dad and my neighbor had to stand for fucking 5.5 hours. For the famous Twin Towers beat two wimps TV taping. So yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's like you said, Savage and Warrior were having these matches after Savage turns where they're champion versus champion, but the titles weren't on the line. But still, I mean, you didn't get that. You didn't see those types of matches in that era. And
good guy, because Rick Rude came out. But then they were doing like the subtle heel thing with Savage, and then Savage turned on TV, and I'm sure they continued to do those matches. It was just a different dynamic, yeah. And then, you know, you get to WrestleMania.
Well, let's talk about Let's talk about the promos, because there was that set of promos where each man, you know, talked about the feud, and they showed all the clips where Savage was first. And then Hogan gave his rebuttal. To this day, I thought it then, I think it now. Savage was totally in the right in doing what he did. When you watch that video and hear him explain it, and then hear Hogan's explanation on it, you're like, well, fucking Savage is right. Hogan's a shitty friend.
Yeah, and then when he picked up Elizabeth. Yeah, all of that, Savage was completely right. But in little kid mind, I just was like, I guess so. And then the magazines hammered it home with, I love Elizabeth like a sister.
Oh, one of the greatest covers ever.
Yeah, so like, you know, it didn't do Hogan any favors there, I guess, either. But yeah, it's promos were really good, particularly Macho Man. Macho Man, like one of the greatest unhinged promos in the history of wrestling.
Did you, as we record this, did you see the thing that aired on A&E? the Sunday night before we recorded this. It was the rivalry show on Hogan and Savage. Did you see them talking about those promos, what Savage was dealing with at the time?
No.
Savage had a bad infection in his elbow, and he was in severe pain trying to cut those promos. And it kind of, now you see it and you see how he looks and how he was sweating and fucking looking psychotic, because they were showing like clips between takes where he's just he's fucking struggling. You know, in some takes he just has to stop because he's hurting so bad. I was like, wow, that's crazy. I never knew that. And the fact that they used that footage and showed it again. Hey, so it was so awesome at WWE Library. I mean, he was undergoing some serious health issues, but he fought through it to cut these promos, and it added more to it because he was in so much pain.
Yeah, that's, I gotta watch that. See, that whole A&E thing, I came around to that late because I just figured they were all just the usual bullshit WB fodder.
Well, I don't watch them. I just saw the clips on Twitter. I was like, holy shit.
But no, I did watch the Lex one, and it was fucking really good and not like rewritten shit. And then on fucking Sunday, Saxton texts me. He's like, oh my God, you're on A&E. I'm like, what? Why? And he's like, the Dusty. And I'm like, okay. And like, I don't have cable, so I only saw it like today. But like, they had B-roll of me and Dusty sitting down, and they're talking about booking. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, this is great. Like now I want to watch all of them. You know, like, oh shit, you know, B-rolls. Like that, I've never seen that thing with me and Dusty. So that clearly was someone just rolling a camera. Like, I love the aspect that they're putting, like, stuff that was rolling that wasn't aired. You know what I mean? Like, the Ultimate Warrior apology that they had years ago.
Oh, right? God,
like, what the fuck is this? Like, I can't believe, like, knowing that they have so much of that, that's cool. Like, that's interesting to me. So I hope they continue doing more stuff like that where you see stories behind once you say cut. You know what I mean? Like, that's cool. Like, that's the right thing to do with the footage, the like exclusive extra stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely watch it now that you just told me that.
All right, so Mania, you know, Elizabeth's in Savage, I mean, in Hogan's corner, and Hogan has Sensational Sherry in his corner, and boy, you talking about iron sharpening iron. When Sherry joined Savage and they became an act, holy shit, that was magic.
Yeah, it was so perfect too. Like, I didn't see Mania 5 live for many years after, but I guess they had Sherry cut a promo there saying how she was going to root for Macho Man. I kind of probably should have put some dots connected, but they were great. And then Beefcake calling her Scary Sherry, and then, you know, the feuding, and she was just as crazy and bombastic as Macho Man. There's a promo with Macho Man, Sherry, and Zeus that I've recently recaptured and rewatched. It's just so fucking unhinged. It's like the craziest promos. It's just like, wow. They all were very committed. They all probably should have been committed, but it was very good.
But Hogan beating Savage, you know, losing the belt to Hogan, you know, it was the obvious thing that was going to happen, but man, it led to one of the biggest business runs they ever had. You know, those rematches, yeah, around the horn.
That Mania 5 did better than Mania 6.
Yeah, but then you look at all the rematches where they just sold out building after building after building. Just, you know, just so hot. And then you mentioned Zeus. It's around the time where No Holds Barred's out. And Zeus is, you know, the heel in that movie. And they decide they want to make Zeus a character on television. And, of course, if you're going to do that, you have to put him with the guy that's feuding with Hogan. And that's Savage. So you have Savage, Sherry, and Zeus as an act, and it fucking worked. It really worked.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you my story about Ron Pope and Zeus?
Who and Zeus?
Ron Pope.
No, the Magnificent Zulu.
Oh, this is going to be bad. But yeah, fuck it, it's a funny story. It's what really happened. So like, when I was a kid, all my friends at school were like, who's Zeus? And I'm like, oh, it's Zulu Zadafi. He was in World Class. And they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah.
Well, Ron Pope was bald in World Class.
we got world class. And I had the Bigelow match against Zulu taped. And like, I always was like, what happened to this guy? So I just assumed it was Zeus. Like, I told all my friends. And like, no, I think he's an actor, Rob. No, it's Zeus, the mighty Zulu. Like, I thought they were, and they were clearly, they don't look fucking anything alike, but like, regardless, that's my story. And unfortunately, I hoodwinked a couple of my classmates. But yeah, it was not Ron Pope. I learned later. But yeah, Ron Pope was not in the movie Friday.
It would have been funny if he was.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, so that was not right. I think the only other thing I got wrong was I said that Paul Nord. I tried to say, someone tried to tell me the fucking Berserker was Hillbilly Jim, and I fucking knew it wasn't, and we just fought about that.
Well, you know, when he was Yukon John Nord, he kind of favored Jim in a way.
Yeah. These are the things you remember, but yeah, so that was the other one, but yeah. And Hogan versus Savage at Mania 5 is a damn good match. It's a really good match, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't be afraid to watch that one.
Well, Hogan and Savage, I mean, they carried that company, you know, in 89. The first part of 89, they carried it. I mean, because, you know, you go from the Hogan-Savage direct feud, then you add Zeus in there, and Brutus gets in there, you know, build the SummerSlam. I mean, it was a hell of a time, man, you know, for WWF. I mean, they got different people. They got new blood coming in. What?
When was he Macho King? Was that summer 89?
We're about to get into that. So you got that about to happen. So also one other thing too at this time, Savage gets all new gear, and I'm not talking about the long tights era. I'm talking about the neon color era of Savage, you know, in short tights, and he gets all these different colors that he had never worn before, and it was so fucking 1989 to see him in the neon and shit like that. I mean, he knew what the deal is.
Yeah, and then he went into the purple tights for Macho King. Yeah, I remember that. Because I was always looking at his gear always was such a focal point. Like, he had the orange for the Hogan match and then different other bright colors, neon. And then, obviously, the purple. And then we're going to get to it. But, like, right when the beginning of 1990 starts, fuck yeah. One of the coolest looking wrestlers in the history of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, They basically blow off the Hogan deal at SummerSlam, you know, for a while as, you know, Hogan and Beaver won the match. And then that's when we go to Macho King. He beats King Duggan to become the king of the World Wrestling Federation.
He's not Macho King at SummerSlam, is he? No.
No. Let me see when he wins it, because
he probably won it at TV taping before, but he didn't show it.
He won it at TV. I'm gonna find out the exact date. King Duggan. All right, so yeah, Duggan's the king. Yeah, at SummerSlam. Remember, because
with the demolition. You're right. Okay,
he's wearing the face paint, but he's the king.
And he painted the 2x4, and he put a little crown on the 2x4 too, which is fucking incredible.
Yeah. So, all right. So the King's Crown match happened. In September. It was the August 30th taping in Portland, Maine.
The big day after SummerSlam taping was always a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it aired in September. So yeah. So we get Macho as the king of WWF. We get the amazing crowning ceremony with all the heels in the ring, always a highlight. And you know, with Savage and Sherry already being what they were at this time, adding this, the king and queen, to their gimmick just puts it over the top. They are so fucking great in this character.
Yeah, Macho King Randy Savage and the sensational Queen Sherry. Yeah, that was good. They, the outfits at Mania 6 are just so fucking over the top and unreal. So yeah, that's good, but like, yeah, they were really good, and it just was, like you said, compounded by being king and queen.
And that, you know, him and Duggan then had their feud, although he still wears Hogan, you know, at times. But him and Duggan start having their feud, you know, for the crown and do that match around the horn and stuff like that. You know, that was a fresh feud. I mean, Duggan wasn't 1985 Jim Duggan, but still, I mean, it was a fresh feud and made sense. And, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, and Duggan, he was perfect for Duggan. He just bounced all around, like much like when Dusty comes, you know, same template where you just have this super athletic heel just bouncing all around for the babyface and super over babyface, mind you. So, yeah, it works.
Yeah, so Savage and Duggan is, you know, the feud that basically ends the 80s for Macho. And you get into the 90s. And that's where his first big angle is with Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire. And that thing goes on for months. And how much did you talk to Dusty about that? You know, that feud or working with Macho?
Not enough. I could say that about everything with talking to Dusty, though. I didn't ask enough about it. I know they all liked each other a lot. They all liked each other and respected each other. And Bruce Prichard was involved, too. They were all close. Everyone got along, and, you know, it's, you know, I know a lot of times just hear wrestlers bitch about the other wrestlers they're working with, but everyone in that mix got along really good. And, you know, I think they drew some money too. And, you know, I think Macho respected Dusty as a veteran and probably let Dusty lead the way on a lot of things that he might not have let anyone else lead. So it's a feud I remember really liking, but it's also a feud I wish, like you said, with the bad news thing where there were more major matches. All their major matches they had were like angles or like had other people involved. So at least on TV and pay-per-view. But I love the elimination at Royal Rumble 90 where he took that crazy backdrop from Dusty over the top too.
Oh yeah. And he made, I mean, Dusty had done stuff in WF before the Savage Feud, but the Savage Feud was my favorite Dusty in WF. I mean, it was just great stuff. You know, they all, like you said, they all played off each other so well because of how well they got along, and it just seemed that way. And Sherry was so great with Sapphire, and it just made sense, and it worked. It definitely worked. And Savage, I mean, yes, Savage isn't working, you know, a great in-ring wrestler at the time, and Dusty's Dusty. But still, they were probably some of the most fucking damn, you know, popular matches on the show because it was Dusty, and it got over.
Yeah, big crowd heat. I'm sure they headlined numerous different shows through that run. And, you know, like I said, you had the different people at ringside, and it worked. And it's like, that's also around the time. I think I tweeted once that, oh, he debuted in the long tights at the Royal Rumble. But then someone's like, nah, he had that match with, I think he had a match with Hogan before with the Buster Douglas, maybe. I don't know what the timeline is, but like, the long tights era coincided with the Dusty feud, which is cool.
And
remember.
Yeah, and to show you how, and again, to show you how they were probably headlining B team shows. Savage never worked the Madison Square Garden in 1990. Not one match for the entire year. Think about that. Not one.
Well, that doesn't help Warrior. Like, everyone shits on drawing power, but like, fuck, Hogan left. Macho Man wasn't around. Like, what the hell do they expect?
Well, okay. That was leading to my next question. We talked about this in Between the Sheets a while back. All right. So, Warrior always gets this bad rap for his, you know, drawing as champion. They didn't do him no favors because wouldn't you think that Savage would have been a logical house show opponent for Warrior? You know, he's former champion. You know, he's Savage. I mean, why not put Warrior and Savage? I mean, you don't have to do a hot TV angle or anything. You can still have Savage and Dusty. But for the Savage not in the Madison Square Garden at all in 1990, he could have worked a couple matches with Warrior. They could have done something to, you know, to do that, you know?
Particularly based on how they didn't give a fuck what was on their TV for a lot of this stuff. They could just do these matches at the houses. I mean, I assume the idea is he's going to go over Dusty. They're going to reheat him throughout the entire year, and then he's going to get the Warrior feud in 1991. I get that, but like, he absolutely, like, I look, everyone's like, how dare you defend Warrior? Look, we all loved Warrior at the time, and like that whole thing about Warrior not drawing, it's like, look, like you just said, look at what the fucking hand was dealt. Like, it was rough.
Yeah,
whereas,
yeah,
that's a lot of stuff. Like, now Cody has the belt and there's no Roman Reigns, right? But, like, ideally, I feel that if someone is the top draw in the company and they pass it to someone new, I wish they'd stick around for a little bit. Because it always, no matter what, you're always going to seemingly see a drop off of interest or drawing. Now, Cody is not, I think the houses are still selling out, so I'm not like just decrying this. I'm saying it would be even better.
Well, it's still way, way early. I mean, we're just weeks in the rain at this time, so we don't know. But
I think no matter what, I always think when there is a big crowning, like look at Sting and Flair in 1990 even. I'm trying to think of other instances.
Well, yeah, and they screwed that up with Black Scorpion.
Yeah, but that Black Scorpion drew short term. Like, But I mean, it wasn't like Flair just disappeared, so maybe this is a bad example. But, like, I always look back at the – like, even when Macho won it the year before, Hogan left in 88, I think, for a little bit before – you know, the Boss Man. I don't know. I think something happened there, too. But, like, I just always think if there's a major turn – there's a major title change, a new top guy, I always wish the prior top guy – like, oh, Shawn Michaels – wins it from Brett, and then Brett leaves for a while. So then Shawn Michaels' drawing power for his early thing is shit. You know, so everyone's like, oh, he didn't draw. Well, fuck, he didn't have really the supporting cast. Like, a lot of wrestling sometimes is about supporting cast. So sometimes just on paper, you see someone, quote unquote, didn't draw. Well, what are the other mitigating factors? You know what I mean?
But then all right, so he doesn't wrestle in Madison Square Garden, but in all 1990. He only works three matches in Boston Garden. January against Duggan, February against Dusty, and August in a tag with Sherry against Dusty and Sapphire. He works the Spectrum in January and February. In March, he does the tag with Dusty and Sapphire in June. He does the singles in August, but that's SummerSlam. And he wrestles Warrior in November. So him and Warrior do have November and December at the Spectrum at 90. So they do give Warrior that, you know, at the time. And that's when this angle is starting to simmer up, because we have the whole thing where Sapphire turns on Dusty. So Dusty moves on to DiBiase. And Savage is in like this no man's land as 90 comes to an end, because he's kind of working with Warrior in a way, but he's not. They don't have a hot angle going on per se, but they are having some house show matches. Warrior, I mean, really is Warrior and Slaughter is one that's getting, you know, heated up, and Royal Rumble happens, and they do the whole thing where Sherry does the thing with Warrior, where she rubbing his leg and about to give him a blowjob and whatever way it looks, and this, that, and the other, and Savage attacks him. You know, that was what really kicks that off, breaking the scepter over Warrior's head. I mean, that was a hot fucking angle right there. And then, you know,
says, I love your beautiful face.
Warrior. I mean, the way she was talking to him, I still remember watching that as a kid, and like, my God, you know?
And then she drops on their knees, and Warrior does this stupid wide smile. Oh, my God. It's so fucking great. I don't give a shit what anyone says. It's very good.
It's hilarious.
And then the fucking scepter breaks, all that shit. Oh, when he attacked him in the aisle and he came like he's fucking doing a 40-yard dash. And just
oh, insane. Yeah, Maniac Savage, because he doesn't have another king. He has a bandana and a shirt and his tights.
Probably like 40 then, and he was so fucking quick. It was just unbelievable. He was impressive in 1990-91.
All right, let's see how old Savage was then. Savage was 38.
Hey. He was moving it. He was fucking quick like a gazelle. And then so that all happens, and then they move on to Mania. But like even before Mania, like they're doing the contract signing, and all Undertaker's gong hits, and they start slowly integrating Undertaker into the feud, even like indirectly. So I kind of had a feeling Macho was going to lose the retirement match.
And let's get into that. So they do the attack at Rumble. It now builds up to Mania. And we have career versus career. And that match takes place. And absolutely, it's one of the most memorable matches in WF history. I mean, the emotion, the drama, you know, Elizabeth coming out at the end, you know, that whole payoff. As great a storytelling as WF had in that era.
Yeah, it's a beloved match. People really love that match. I like it a lot. I think that might have been the Mania I had chicken pox, so I always have some kind of grievance with that show. But, like, regardless, really good. Again, it's just – it's I hate when people say, oh, it's just this one guy carrying the other. Rude and Savage got the most out of Warrior, and Hogan, too, got the most out of Warrior than anyone. But, like, Warrior held up his end of the bargain with the intensity larger than life, and then he pinned him with one foot, which everyone's always like, oh, it's so disrespectful. It's like, do you not fucking think Macho Man wrote that as step number 151 on the fucking list? Like, of course it was Macho's idea. He was leaving wrestling. Like, he was like, fuck it. Beat me and beat me ridiculously, and he did. I'm hit you with my finisher five times, kick out. Destroy me, you know, like, good for Savage. That's very unselfish, you know, so cool. But yeah.
All right, I mean in the reunion with Elizabeth, I mean, how great was that?
No, that was good too. I remember as a kid, like, you know, I'm like a fucking 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, like, ah, fuck this, what is this shit? But everyone loved it. All, it was a good thing. Like, my sister got a kick out of it. Like, it was good. And then, like, he retired, and, like, the next day flew to Japan and wrestled Rick Martel, I guess. So then there was that.
So Savage is trying to have a kid with Elizabeth. You know, that's the whole thing of why he retires, quote-unquote, at the time, so he can get off the gas and try to have a child. And as this is going on, he becomes an announcer. He takes Honky Tonk Man's place. Well, Honky Tonk was already gone, but still, he takes the third spot with Vince and Piper on Superstars. And at first, he's still heelish Macho Man, well, certain times, and then he eventually, you know, works himself into being the complete babyface. But what about Savage as an announcer? What did you think about him at that time?
I didn't mind it at the time, but I had a more discerning year, I probably nitpicked it, but he was fine. He wasn't the greatest. He wasn't the worst. But there's always that moment where Undertaker beat the fuck out of Hogan on the funeral parlor. And then you have Flair, Undertaker, Percy Pringle, Hogan, Piper, and Macho Man doing a run in, all facing off. And I always think back to that picture in the magazine. It's like, holy fuck. That's like, maybe the biggest amount of star power in the history of wrestling on screen at one time.
Well, all right. So before we get to that, I mean, you got the big build up to SummerSlam 91. Match made in heaven, match made in hell, and the big wedding with Elizabeth and the big angle that comes out of that where Jake turns heel because he hadn't turned by that point in time. Turns heel with the Undertaker, the snakes in the wedding gift, Sid Justice makes a save. Just fantastic stuff watching that. I rewatched that back the other day. I mean, it was so, like, hokey at the time in a way, but, man, you watch it again, like, man, that is fantastic storytelling.
This is the one where we're going to disagree vehemently. I hated the match made in heaven. I hated that there was a wedding.
I'm not talking about the wedding. I'm talking about the ceremony. I mean, afterwards, the reception.
Can't talk about the ceremony without talking about the wedding. The wedding infuriated me.
It sucked.
When I was a little kid, and that fucking when that wedding ended, and there wasn't an angle, I like Heenan was hilarious. One little kid who was like my height walking. He's like, oh, is that a midget? I was like dying. But like, aside from that, I was like, wow, this is ridiculous. And then they do the angle, and Sid's my favorite wrestler, but like we just got like the worst handicap match main event of all time. The Jake the Snake heel turn was so fucking stupid because they did like the WCW midget blowing up two hard M's on the show. I apologize. Little person blowing up a boat angle, right? And I was like, oh no. You know, so they did this very over the top. It wasn't like a heel turn in a ring in a match like we'd see. It was like a heel turn in a backstage vignette, like in a spooky graveyard and snake pit. That's just, if I was younger, maybe I'd have dug it. I didn't like it. And then you have the anniversary, the stupid angle of the Cobra peeking out of the gift at the reception. I didn't like any of it. I really liked everyone involved. I was just like, what are we doing? But like, then Sid gets immediately injured, which I'm sure you're going to get into. So then Sid and Jake's big feud doesn't happen. So then you got to bring back Macho Man.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Madness, because Macho had been suspended by Jack Tunney. You know, we had the big snake bite angle, you know, and all that stuff, and Macho suspended by Jack Tunney and this, that, and the other. And we have the whole big gotta get Macho reinstated. And yeah, I mean, who knows how different things were if Sid didn't get the squeegee incident, you know, with Mike Graham. But the other thing too, you know, Sid suffering his legit arm injury. But I mean, yeah, I mean, Sid and Jake was going to be at the house show feud until they really got the Savage thing going. But then we get Mr. Madness, you know, that whole thing. But the snake bite angle, though, is again, it's funny, you know, look at the stuff we're talking about with Savage and all these great memorable angles that he's involved in. And this is another one, you know, so extreme and violent for television. And they got in some deep shit for that too, man. I mean, 91 WF is one of the weirdest years in their history because they were doing shit in that year, you know, like the Jake Warrior stuff and this angle here and this other stuff that was just so against their, you know, type.
Well, 91 and 92, because in 92 you got the fucking Berserker tries to impale Undertaker with a
Papa
sword.
Shango.
Papa Shango. You got the shock stick angle with Boss Man and Mountie. There's just so much wild, like Papa Shango, yeah, puts the guy's feet on fire. Like, there's so much, like, that shit was so crazy. It's kind of fun in a vacuum. It's like, holy shit, look at the stuff they were doing that year and a half. But like, the snake bite thing, like, we got the big red X on it, but then when I saw it without the big red X, it was just so fucking nuts. You know, and I guess there's folklore around that, whether or not he was devenomized or whether it was real or he got sick afterward. I don't know what's true or not, but I know I saw a snake gnawing on the guy's arm and some blood, so it was pretty fucking crazy. And that tells you about Macho Man's commitment to wrestling. I mean, he let a snake bite him on the arm.
Yeah.
Would you let a snake bite you on the arm?
No.
I'm not going to let one either. Like, fuck that.
No, not at all. I would not let a snake bite me in any way.
When we do this show, you got to put a poll underneath it. Would you let a snake bite your arm?
I mean,
he was telling the truth or not? But
that was fucking dedication, you know. I mean, that's Savage though. That's what Savage did. He did that type of shit, you know. I mean, he's not Scott Steiner, you know, or something like that. You know, let's punch ourselves in the face and stuff like that to show black eyes and shit like that. But, I mean, still, he got bit by a snake.
Yeah, he's committed. That's just still so crazy to me.
But that angle was hot, man. It was hot, you know. But again, we never got that big match with them, you know?
Kind of, but we got Tuesday in Texas. We got a Saturday night main event. To me, it was enough. I kind of wish, like, if this Tuesday in Texas where he all but punches Miss Elizabeth in the face and Macho Man does that, one of the best promos in the history of wrestling, because he's so mad at himself that he can't even speak. He's just screaming. It's so unbelievably real. But then they get the main event, and he pretty much vanquishes and destroys Jake, and then it leads to the whole Undertaker angle with Jake afterwards. it's still all good enough that I really appreciate it in a vacuum. I'm in hindsight pissed that we got the Survivor Series 91 and it was supposed to be Sid and Jake on the team side. And then not only did they not give us Sid and Jake, but then Macho Man didn't get reinstated until on the pay-per-view, but they didn't put him in a match on the pay-per-view. They said you had to buy this Tuesday in Texas. And we weren't doing that. But like in hindsight, you know, this Tuesday in Texas is not a bad show. Like I'm sure everyone was a little pissy about it when it happened, but you know, it was a good show. And that's, you know, Macho Man and Jake, you know, getting they didn't headline that show, but they sure stole it. So,
and an Undertaker turning babyface off of it, you know, and I mean, that was a big deal, you know, to turn him babyface because that was unexpected at that time. Because yeah. You still think he has some you know, legs as a heel character.
Yeah, and that was another one where, God damn, they were loaded. Like, that Royal Rumble 92.
Oh,
that,
man,
that,
yeah.
Like, that, I mean, I know business might have been down, but oh my God, that company was loaded with talent at the time.
Name talent. I mean, big names.
Yeah, like Sid, Flair, Undertaker, Macho, Piper, Hogan, Road Warriors, fucking Lex Luger showed up at the on camera at least at WrestleMania. It's like, wow, what a group.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so we had the deal where Ric Flair wins the Rumble and we're going to have who faces him at WrestleMania. Hogan wins the thing, you know, the big press conference, Sid heel turn. So now we get Hogan and Sid together, you know, for WrestleMania. So Flair has that opponent. So now let's put Savage in. And then we get the angle with the pictures. And again, talk about angles that is so against WWF type. That angle right there. And the production they did on that angle for 1992, the way they had those pictures look as seamless as they looked was fucking amazing. I mean, you looked at it, you would thought that those pictures were for real and not spliced.
Yeah, the innovation of Photoshop in 1992. Yeah. And that was another one where I remember they were like, oh, we're going to show the big picture of Elizabeth, the big penthouse spread or whatever. So I saw everything. Oh, I don't know if I should get WrestleMania. My parents will never let me watch it again. But like, no, that was interesting, and I thought the Mania match was very good, and it was very exciting at the time. That was a real dream match, Ric Flair and Randy Savage. And you know, I thought it's a very good match. I loved the Macho Man gear in that one, and I always thought Hoosier Dome looked great on camera. So I'm a big fan of that match. It's not a top five match for me for Macho Man, but it's a damn good match.
And those Savage promos, too. I mean, he was motivated, and yeah, he definitely cut some great promos on Flair, you know, about Elizabeth and that, man. And then he wins the title, you know.
He does. Unexpected.
And, it was unexpected. It really was, because Flair, you would have thought Flair would have had the title and would have kept it for a while. And, I mean, and Savage didn't need to win the title. It's still kind of a weird decision to this day, in my opinion, to do that.
Well, it's weird because we just got done mentioning, all the amount of people. His Ultimate Warrior comes back. So it's like, oh, that WrestleMania had so many people. But by SummerSlam, they're almost all gone. Like, it's so fucking weird because, like, by SummerSlam, you know, Sid's gone, and then, you know, Hulk's pretty much gone for a while, and it's just like they kind of needed a top baby face, I guess, and they went with Savage, so that's what they got.
But it was going to kick, supposedly, it was going to kick into Savage and Jake doing a house show feud for the title, which would have let, you know, Jake win the one, but still, I mean, it was supposed to be Savage and Jake. It ended up being Savage and the fucking Mountie.
That was, yeah, because Jake Right? Yeah, Jake's last match was WrestleMania, so yeah. I never knew that. That's interesting.
So Savage and Mountie had a little run, and then Savage and Flair started doing rematches around the horn. So you look at, you know, how that played out. I mean, that went throughout the fucking month of May.
Yeah, Mountie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird choice. But, yeah, so Savage and Flair are dominating, you know, May. But Savage also has matches with Shawn Michaels in that time period. One was on Coliseum Video. There's a deal where he's wrestling guys like Skinner and Repo Man and for TV matches and stuff. I mean, so we were getting some different types of matches, but it just seemed like Savage and Flair, I don't know, after WrestleMania and they did the whole thing, it's like it didn't have no heat no more. You know, Warrior's back. It's and Undertaker starting to get, you know, steam as a babyface. And then, of course, it leads to them changing their mind at SummerSlam and doing Savage Warrior. Babyface versus babyface. And that was a bold move, you know, for them. I mean, I know there's Savage and Hogan at Mania in 90. I mean, Warrior Hogan, excuse me, at Mania 90. And Savage and Warrior, of course, has the history from the retirement match. But very interesting call for them to do that and have Flair be like this guy who's trying to stir the pot between them two.
Yeah, they never even brought up the retirement match that I recall. And then you just have the match is more about Henning and Perfect. And it made no fucking sense. And like neither one was gonna go. And they tried to convince people that one would, and it just didn't work. And the match, I thought the match was very good, but I just found it to be so disappointing. And then I kind of look at that Warrior match as the end of Randy Savage as we knew him.
Yes.
I thought he lost step after that.
Yes.
And even losing a step, he's still one of the best wrestlers in the world, so it's fine. But like I always saw that 1992 SummerSlam as kind of like, yeah, not just how he's featured, but just kind of like, okay, there's just not that insane, like, what's that guy's name? Carl Lewis level speed on everything that he was doing, you know?
His age and his crazy career was starting to catch up with him. And, you know, they have the match Warrior, he retains, but then he loses the Flair, you know, in a fucking non-televised show. I mean, on a TV taping.
Another Hershey, yeah.
I mean, so we have that situation, and then we get the build-up for Survivor Series, which is Savage and Warrior against Flair and Razor, and then, of course, Warrior gets fired. But, and out of that, we do get the amazing Mr. Perfect turn, where Savage was a huge part of that.
We do, but it's also kind of weird where Razor Ramon debuts, has some of the greatest squash matches in the history of the business that summer. Immediately, everyone just loves him, and they are skyrocketing him to the moon, deservedly so. And, like, the whole macho versus machismo thing, like, Razor kind of cost him the belt. But then, like, they don't really do a major match together, as far as I know. You know, I don't remember any. And then, you know, it just goes into something else. And I guess they have the Survivor Series tag, but it's then, you know, they're both doing different stuff come the new year.
Well, I mean, as 93 goes, Savage is out as a wrestler again. You know, he becomes the you know, main announcer on Raw with Vince and Rob Bartlett. He's doing Superstars with Lawler. His wrestling is in fucking USWA. Mainly, you know, other than wrestling on Coliseum Video matches, but yeah, his main wrestling's in USWA.
Yeah, puts over Yoko on all the house shows. Yeah, you're right. And then he debuts the macho little person and you know, all the rest of that stuff. But then late 93, we get that amazing angle with Crush. It's a really good angle. It was one of the better WB angles in 93. Not like there was a ton of them, but that was a great angle. And that was Macho Man again, just selling and all the blood in his mouth. And, you know, that was just so deadly looking. All he did was pick him up from a high place and drop him onto the steel guardrail. But they made that seem like that was deadly.
It put him out of wrestling on WF television for a while because of that. Like I said, he was strictly an announcer for most of 93. All right, so the 93 USWA stuff, how much of that have you seen?
I've seen negative. I've seen none of it, yeah.
Well, I mean, you're not going to have the matches. I mean, I think a couple of the matches did go on their video, like some of their commercial videos. You see clips, but Savage's promo work, and he's reunited with Sherry for a short time in Memphis. It's really fucking good.
Oh, yeah, I got to find it then. Yeah, I've seen none of it. Was it on their TV?
Yeah. Like he cuts a promo in Vegas at WrestleMania in front of the fountains on Lawler that air on TV. I mean, it's really, really good to see him in that environment again in Memphis. And it's really fun because it's against what the TV is. Because TV is the dynamics the other way around. Lawler's the heel and Savage the face on WF TV. Then you get to Memphis and you get the reverse dynamic.
Yeah, I gotta watch some of that. Like, I certainly read about all this, but it didn't really hit me as well as it would have if I actually watched the TV. But yeah, that's cool.
And so Savage is basically, you know, nondescript in 93 until we get the Crush heel turn. And that was a hot angle, too, you know, where Crush turns on Macho and joins Mr. Fuji and leads up to their big WrestleMania 10 match. What are your memories of the Savage Crush feud?
I liked it. And I thought the match at Mania 10 was better than I thought it was fine. I think people pan it sometimes. I didn't think it was that bad. And like, okay, yeah, the finish was kind of blown with the stupid pulley system, but you know, thought the match was fine. It was a little unusually put together, but you know, I thought it stood out on a show. And, you know, I guess those guys are buddies. So it was nice of Macho Man to try to put him over, even though I guess he beat him in the blow off. But, you know, no, fuck it. You know, and then I guess that's it, right? Like, what else does Macho Man do? Macho Man really doesn't do anything else.
That's it. I mean, that's it. Yeah. That's his last big angle in WF.
The end of his career. Oh, wait. Yeah.
All right. So. We have the situation where he leaves because he wants to wrestle. He wants to be a full-time wrestler again, and Vince doesn't want him to do that per se. And he leaves, and Vince takes that shit very fucking personally. And, you know, it's a thing where we've kind of theorized that Vince thought of Savage as a true friend. And he felt betrayed by Savage for leaving in that way. It was a weird deal at that time for Vince to he was acting and everything regarding that. I mean, but you got to understand where Randy's coming from.
I never looked at it like that because they wished him well. I've always felt that was like revisionism where like they wished him well. And then he showed up at the other place and it was months after. And then it's just like, okay, we're both doing our own thing.
Well, there was other stuff that came out at later on that we you know, found later. Stuff that was said and stuff, you know.
Oh, okay.
So Vince was legitimately hurt.
Lawler claimed on one of their shows that Macho Man showed up the next day and Vince had no idea, which that's not fucking true. Like, they, if anything, he gave his notice. They said goodbye and they thanked him. And then that was that. And then
he shows up.
I think shit all went south with the Nacho Man stuff. That's my take.
That was part of the problem, though. Vince had a hard on for Hogan and Savage, and he let it out then. But anyway, let's get to WCW. So he shows up in WCW, which was, I mean, a huge coup for WCW at that time. You know, to get Savage in there. I mean, Hogan's there, and Hogan's feuding with fucking Sullivan and the Butcher and John Tenta's Avalanche. But to have Savage come in, a major deal. To have another of the major stars in wrestling show up in WCW, which needed that bad. And he comes in, and that gave you that doubt that he might come in as a heel. And at Starrcade 94, he shows up, and he teases joining with Sullivan, and then hits him with the chair, and now he's, you know, Babyface Savage. Yay! What are your thoughts on his WCW debut?
I like the I might shake his hand, or I might slap him in the face. He basically sold a promo on his debut, but I also was brutally anti-WCW at this point. I hated Hogan's Heroes. I hated the fact that my glorious Spring Stampede and Slamboree 94 turned into what it turned into over that summer. I was so into ECW. So, like, I didn't give a fuck about Macho Man in late 94. I didn't care about, like, I still watch WCW. I don't think I bought a WCW pay-per-view in 95 until Starrcade. I did like Nitro when it started, but like, I don't really recall too much of Macho Man and WCW from December 94 to about when Nitro started. That's when, well, no, I guess he did the Flair matches. You're right. He did the Flair matches, which people heralded.
Well, his first feud, remember his first feud though, was with Bubba. You know, he's with Bubba, Sting's with Avalanche, and Hogan's with Vader. So you get Savage and Bubba early. And the thing is, though, Savage, though, is dressed in red and yellow all the time. And he looks like fucking Hogan's mascot. That was the worst thing about that early WCW run was him wearing the Hogan colors. Again, looking like Hogan's fucking mascot little buddy deal. Like he's fucking Gilligan to the Skipper. I hated it. Luckily, they got out of that. So, you know, but so, yeah, so we get Savage and Flair again, and we get Angelo Poffo's involved in the angle and everything. And it does really well. It'll do even better the next year, but we get that. And then, that leads into, going into, Nitro, the Nitro era, where Lex Luger shows up and Savage and Luger becomes the hot feud, because you can't trust Lex Luger. Savage knows him. You can't trust him. And we have that whole deal where Sting's caught in the middle and Hogan is being pulled two ways. And it made for some really bad promos. I will say that. I mean, it was some really bad television off of that. And Hogan being unsure of Savage at times. I mean, having your baby faces doing that type of stuff, I mean, it makes them all look silly, but yeah, I mean, and Savage is going through some bad injuries, that arm injury, and then you have the whole him and Hogan going to the dark side and wearing all black. I mean, that early Nitro era was just insanity.
I didn't like the 95 and 94 stuff largely, but like, I did like the Nitro stuff because I had my junior weights on the early shows. They had Scott Norton. They had enough window dressing.
Oh, Savage
it.
Scott Norton. That was Savage's first deal Nitro, and I was wanting a good feud out of it, but we didn't get it. We got that one match.
Yeah, but I kind of liked the spontaneity of it. It was like, Flash Norton, I'm going to get you next week.
Yeah,
come on.
He made Scott Norton like a big deal, though. Yeah, Scott Norton, I know you. You know what I mean? Yeah, for Savage to acknowledge that. I mean, that was a hot angle.
Yeah, and I kind of liked Luger. Like, I liked all this shit just because Luger was so fresh.
And Luger was great in his role.
The idea of, oh my God, they have Sting, Luger, Macho, and Hogan. Because, like, Vader leaving pissed me off. But then Luger come in was like, oh shit, this is kind of wild. Like, I was not into Luger in WWE, but, like, this is brand new. And all these people who you didn't think would ever interact are kind of interacting. And finally, they did Sting and Hogan. And I get it. It was very forgettable, but they did it. And then they did Luger Hogan, which also was nothing too much to write home about. So Macho was kind of the odd man out. But, you know, I liked the distrust of Luger. I liked when Luger turned on him when the Mummy and the Giant made sex to Hulk Hogan at Halloween Havoc 95. Like, I liked that angle where, like, when Luger started kicking Macho, That place came unglued. They're like, oh, fuck. And then Luger turned. And then that led to, you know, the, I think, what was the Starrcade where, was it Luger and, was it Luger and Macho? Or was it Luger, Macho, and Sting? And the winner fought Flair. I forget.
Starrcade.
Exactly.
Starrcade was Luger, Macho, Sting, where the winner fought Flair.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And then, you know, who won that? Was that where Macho won? Or?
Yeah, yeah. And he fought Flair, and that's when, you know, we had that gusher of blood with Flair. And, I mean, that was it. You know, of course, that was a Starrcade with New Japan.
Which is great. Yeah, I like that one a lot. And then, you know, I guess that kicks off Macho and Flair again, which, you know, the wrestling papers will tell you reignited business before the NWO.
Well, you know, here's the thing. It drew better house show numbers than NWO did in that era. I mean, they fucking drew. But yeah, I mean, so because they had the hot story, but who can, heck can we forget? Savage faced Tenzan at Starrcade. That was a match.
Certainly was, yeah. And then, you know, I guess he did matches with, like, Benoit, and I think he had one with Finley. And, you know, he'd have these TV matches, so they were using him. They were letting him wrestle.
But he was so fucking bandaged up. I mean, it was just – but he was working hard.
Yeah, like, build him on. Yeah, he had, like, random matches on Nitro, and they were all pretty good. You know, I can't really say nothing too bad. Like, I don't remember one – super memorable Macho Man match around these times. I'm trying to, but I can't. Like,
it was all about the angles. It was all about the angles because it was building up to Elizabeth turning on Savage. You know,
yeah,
that was a huge fucking deal. And joining Ric Flair of all people. You know,
yeah. Because I remember around that time. Yeah, she turned. That was the double main event at Super Brawl.
Super Brawl.
Then that happens, and then Macho Man, you know, continues to do his thing. And then I guess it all leads to the NWO match, right?
Well, I mean, him and Flair have their deal. But then Savage is becoming one of the guys who's going to be the WCW heroes to go against the outsiders. So it's Savage, you know, staying in Luger against Hall, Nash, and a mystery opponent, Bash at the Beach. And you very easily could have thought Savage would have turned on because he was the guy from WF, just like Luger. You know, it could have been either one of them turning on in that match. But, of course, it was Hogan in the end. But it's funny that we had that happen, but we didn't get Hogan and Savage out of that at first. They were waiting on that one. But yeah, I mean, you get all this crazy shit in the NWO, Savage on running and jumping on top of the limousine at Disney as they were driving off. I mean, only Macho would have been the guy to do that. I mean, the NWO stuff in that time, it doesn't get talked about enough when it was just Hogan, Hall, and Nash and those angles they were doing at Disney during the Olympics when they were taping there every week. I mean, that was some great shit.
Yeah, I loved all that stuff. I that whole summer was just magical. Like, I was finishing up high school and going to college in the fall of 96. And the whole summer just watching the TV was great. And it was so exciting. You didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I guess I read that Hogan was going to be the guy, but it was still really impactful when it did happen. And then the idea of every other week, you didn't know who else was going to pop up and be part of this thing. And this is very interesting. And it was probably one of the better angles of, you know, in the 90s. And I was really into wrestling in that time. I was really into ECW, but they were so hot with this angle. I was probably more into this than I was ECW in 96. It was really exciting.
And then, you know, Lisa Hogan and Savage of Halloween Havoc, which, of course,
yes,
they have that big match there. And
which, yeah, my hall in school, everyone put money in to get a pay-per-view. Buddy, in 1995, if I was in high school and I was like, hey, everyone, let's go get a pay-per-view, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, wrestling sucks. you nerd. Like, what are you doing? No ass. In 96, imagine my bemusement of an entire hallway of like dudes being like, yeah, we got to get Halloween Havoc 96 and see what's. And not only that, I think that was the same night as a Holyfield fight or something. Like, I remember being like, maybe two TV situation, but like, it was
not huge. The same night because Havoc was on Sunday. They didn't do a big boxing match on Sunday. But let me see, okay. let me see when Evander, because Evander fought Tyson for the first time.
It might have been a thing where we just also watched that year. But like, regardless, it was just like a big thing that everyone wanted to watch. So it's like, oh, shit.
Tyson Holyfield 1 was November the 9th. So it was
a little bit after Halloween.
2 weeks. Okay. 2 weeks. Almost 2 weeks after.
That was like the big bonding experience back
in the same building. Yeah, the same MGM Grand Garden Arena, same building.
There you go. Wow. So, yeah, I remember that Havoc. And when Piper came out, holy fuck. Like, Piper's debut was so much better than Macho Man.
That's the thing I was going to get into. I wonder how Savage felt about, you know, we had this big match with Hogan, blah, blah. Here's Piper making his debut, and that's all everybody's going to talk about.
And then he was gone, I think, for a little while, which became a recurring thing. And then the team disenfranchised stuff with Sting, I liked. It was kind of weird, but I liked it.
Yeah, and then he joins NWO completely thanks to Elizabeth. And
he's just back with the NWO. Here's the thing. I watched a lot of that night, like January, February, March, Nitro 97. Like, we're about to shit on it, but it was so fucking exciting.
Well, at the time, yeah. It doesn't age well, but at the time, it was great.
I love it. It does age well. I literally watched all of it recently, and I had a blast. It was just big buildings, excited fans.
Oh, yeah, you definitely had that.
It was DDP turning good. And then, like, everybody doing their own thing. I really liked it. And our little junior weights on the show, Rey Mysterio and Psychosis matches here and there. And, you know, like, fucking Jim Powers.
You look good, Jim.
Rick Fuller, you know, the whole thing. But, like, yeah, I love those. It's probably the nostalgia talking.
Of course.
I really did. Like, as much as I didn't like late 94 and, like, you know, some of – I guess early 95 or whatever, like, oh man, this 97, like 90, summer 96, like, you know, probably the end of, you know, 97 was just fucking great.
But yeah, so Savage, you know, comes back, joins NWO, and then we start the feud with DDP. And that was a hell of a feud. I mean, it got DDP over, made him a star. Lots of interesting angles in this involving Kimberly and Elizabeth as well. I mean, Savage did as much to make DDP as anybody did in that era to make somebody.
Yeah, it was easily the best Randy Savage WCW stuff. I fucking love that feud. Like, DDP is kind of like a Jake-like wrestler in ways. But I guess he's a Savage-like wrestler in ways, and like they like to plan everything out. So that's like a perfect match. And, like, all of those matches are great. Like, as far as I can remember, like, I remember there was one on, like, a B pay-per-view that headlined that was great. I'm forgetting what exact pay-per-view it was, but it was really good. I think it was Spring Stampede 97. It was DDP winning with a diamond cutter. I was like, holy fuck. Like, he beat Macho Man. And then they had a couple others. I'm sure Macho Man got a win back or whatever. But, like, the feud, the thing with his wife and Playboy, like, it was all great. It was good stuff. And, like, all the surrounding characters around both guys, it was just very interesting and star-studded, we'll say.
And this all leads into 98, where we get the NWO breakup, where Savage is kicked out of the NWO and becomes a member of the Wolfpack, but then he fucks up his ACL, tears his ACL, right as that is going.
Oh, I don't see. I don't even remember that. I remember him being in it and everyone wearing red, and I just remember not liking it at the time because this is where reading the wrestling papers gets you in trouble because, like, I was like, ah, well, those guys aren't really friends in real life. Why is everyone like? I just thought when they split it up, you needed Nash, Hall, I think X-Pac wasn't even there anymore, but like you need a Nash and Hall on one team and like they just split it. And it just seemed like they just like flip coins on the who was where. And I didn't really care for it, but you know, Macho Man was still kicking around, which was good. Cause I did like him in WCW. I don't want to shit on this whole WCW run. I liked it, but you know, a lot of the top guys at that point were just kind of coasting a little bit.
So Savage goes away. And then he comes back in 1999, fucking jacked to the degree. I mean, wow. And then with Gorgeous George, his new girlfriend, and then, you know, Medusa gets involved in it, and Miss Madness, you know, Nora Greenwald, Molly Holly. I mean, 1999 Savage is out of control.
About to say something a little bit controversial. My favorite Randy Savage is 85 to like 86 Randy Savage. My second favorite Randy Savage is completely roided out Randy Savage in 1999.
Shoot elbows.
Fucking love him. There was no more steroids left. It was amazing. It was like he moved in with Ted Arcidi when he was injured. He showed back up. It was unbelievable. He should never have been able to look like that. I wanted to do steroids after I saw him. This was amazing. And then he was fucking immobile, but he still had those short punches. He started doing pile drivers again, which is fucking cool. His elbows would legit destroy people. He was put with Sid, who I like.
Yes.
I liked all of it so much. He hit that one referee. I think he pile drove the referee. It was the unhinged Savage of Memphis in WCW, and it was awesome. It was fucking great. I mean, I'm sure the creative around all this wasn't the fucking best, but in my little brain, I'm picturing him pile driving Rey Mysterio and beating the fuck out of people and breaking people's chest cavities with elbows. And then he was just gone again too, I think. And I was like, fuck, where'd Randy Savage go?
Well, I mean, when all the stuff was going on where the, you know, Russo and Bischoff change and all that stuff happened, I mean, he left. He was gone.
And he came back with sparkles.
And then
everything I just said about what I loved about Macho Man in 99 ended when he came back with his sparkle outfit with the little hat. I hated it so much. It was like watching a midlife crisis, and I can say that now. It'd be like if I, like, all of a sudden was like, I don't even know what the kids wear now, but like, I'm 45 now. I don't know what Savage was in 99, but oh my God.
41.
Holy fuck, I'm older than Randy Savage in 99. But yeah, it's like Randy Savage and sparkles. What wasn't sparkles? What do you call it? What was he wearing? What was all those little – what do you call that he was wearing?
Sequins.
He
had like
the red sequin jacket with the matching red sequin hat. And I remember he was like, I'm on hit and it's legit. It's like he had this young girlfriend and he was trying to talk like her and he just sounded lame as shit. And then like – it was all over.
Yeah, he made that one appearance in the number one contender battle royal on May 2nd, 2000 in the Russo Bischoff era, and that was it. He hadn't been on TV since January. He shows up then in that battle royal, does his stuff there, and then is gone. Never seen again in WCW. Oh, and how can we forget him and Rodman had a match at Road Wild, a hardcore match. Oh, my God.
Oh. I don't remember it because I'm not necessarily sure I've even seen. I know I have the match on tape. I just, yeah, not no good. And then he had the sequins. And like, do you remember when Gorgeous George went to ECW? I was losing my mind because I wanted giant steroid Macho Man to show up and like attack the Sandman or something. And then obviously, I'm sure they couldn't afford it, so it didn't happen. But Macho Man and ECW would have been sick. I wish it happened.
It almost did. They tried to get him in 2000. Paul was trying his best to get him in there in 2000, and that would have been crazy. But, I mean,
yeah, they Ramon for a shot or two. So it's like, you know, getting Macho Man. Like, who in ECW in 2000 would you have liked to see Macho Man wrestle? I think him and Tajiri would have been a barn burner.
And 2000 Macho Man, that would have been interesting. Rhino.
Yeah, Rhino's good. Not Mike Awesome.
Steve like Corino. Corino would have sold like a motherfucker for him.
Steve Corino would have been good. That's true. Yeah, Macho Man and WCW, maybe Chris Chetty. No, I don't know. It would have been interesting. And then it didn't happen. And then he just was gone. He was never to be seen again.
Until, well, this Spider-Man.
Yeah, see, if you watch the movies, and Spider-Man. Allegedly, he was in NWA TNA. But
he was. One match. Him, AJ Styles, and Jeff Hardy against Jarrett and Hall and Nash in December 2004. His last match.
Fuck, man. That was during the Recluse Randy Savage years.
Yeah.
He had that fucking rap album that we all laughed at.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, that's one thing, another thing, too, is, you know, in the 2000s, we don't remember for his wrestling, but remember for Spider-Man and his diss record on Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, and Perfect Friend. You Are My Perfect Friend. That was written by Lanny Poffo, Mel Kirkland. Me and my friends in the 2000s would sing along with.
But it's a shame, though, that Savage wasn't around wrestling more than 2000s, you know?
That's a lot of those guys. Lex, Sid, it's like a lot of those guys at the end of WCW, it's like it was the end of them. It's weird. Like, I mean, I know they all probably weren't long for the world in the ring, but Lex was such a big name, and he only had like a, 13, 14 year career? Like, wasn't, like, if you think about Lex, like, you know, AJ Styles has been wrestling now for how fucking long? Like 24 years? Like,
longer than that. About 26.
Some of these other guys we think of as these giant stars, like Sid only had how long of a career? Like, it's kind of crazy.
Sid started in 87?
With Macho Man.
No, Sid was 87 in Memphis, he was. I mean, that's where he debuted as Humongous.
And Macho Man's the guy, though. I remember a Sid Shoot interview where he's like, he saw either Randy Savage at the fucking grocery store or something, and like that was kind of how he got involved as Humongous. Because that's why I thought it was really neat in my dream period of 1999 that Sid and Macho Man linked up again. So,
but I mean, what a career, though. I mean. The guy from being.
I don't know how we were so excited at the beginning, and now we're just like, well, yeah, that all ended pretty fast. But yeah,
it didn't end in the greatest of ways. He never had a send off. You know, look at all these great wrestlers that have these great retirement send offs. He just faded away.
Yeah, but he was also kind of a weirdo and reclusive, and you know.
But I guess it was for the best, you know, because he was this big outlaw. You know, and then, you know, he becomes one of the biggest stars in the history of the business and then just fades away.
Quietly got remarried, the whole thing, and then just hung out in Largo. I've driven past the tree you ran into, for Christ's sake. It's brutal. But yeah, he just hung around Florida and did his thing and didn't really pay no mind to anybody. He probably is one of those guys that would have gotten a call eventually to come get Hall of Fame or some shit, and then you know, it all ended. But you know, Macho, as we've gone through all this stuff, I don't know anymore if he's a top five for me, but he's high up there. He's top 10 for sure.
Well,
but
I mean, as far as personalities in wrestling history, I mean, he's definitely one of the all-time greats. You can't deny
he was incredibly good and consistent for a long, long time is what I can say.
You can't deny his greatness. Absolutely.
And he's probably my favorite wrestler ever on steroids.
Mr. Jeep Swenson?
This is what's fucked up, though, Chris. Think about this for a minute. Do you like Nikita Koloff more in 86 or in 88?
86.
Do you like Macho Man Savage more in 94 or 99?
99.
Look at us. Wrestling broke our brains where if we see someone not on steroids, we don't think they're as good as when they're on steroids.
Now, I will say this about 88 Nikita, though. He was better as a personality because he started getting more animated, you know, and he was doing part of Dusty's, you know, whole babyface crew against the Horsemen, where he was doing the upside down. I always did the Nikita version of the upside down Four Horsemen sign because he would always shake his hand, you know, and wrap his other arm around it and stuff like that. And he was cutting all these promos where he was actually, you know, talking and not just do a shatoa-da, you know, I mean. Yeah. I enjoyed 88.
Lithuanian sickle. I like him too in hindsight.
But 86 Nikita was a fucking, you know, tank.
When he lost weight, he was a better in-ring wrestler as far as like taking bumps and a lot of his reactions and stuff.
But 86 Nikita shouldn't have been doing all that shit, though. That's the thing, because he was a fucking tank.
Yeah, well, then when he re-debuted on steroids in like, at the WrestleMore 91, when he took his shirt off, it was fucking incredible.
We're like, Nikita's back!
He found his steroids. He's gonna be Lex. Yeah, I was so excited. This is how wrestling poisons your brain, kids. Like, I know, hey, it's everyone's individual choice to take steroids, but look.
Well, no, when he took the bandana off and he had no more hair, I mean, that's the shit. Oh, here we go.
Oh, that promo where he's like, "You want me to prove to you? Prove to you, I'm not number one." I'm like, "Oh my god, this is great. That's a really good promo." He's like, "When I beat you 4 years ago," and I'm like, "Oh man, he's back! He's back! He's rushing again."
I know, man.
Oh god!
But anyway, this was a blast. I love doing shows like this because this is so fun and easy to do. And yeah, we gotta do more of these when we get. You know,
we're good with the chronological. Let me tell you, we at one point I was thinking, bro, I think we're gonna have to just do WWF and WCW, but no, we knocked it out. We did it.
Absolutely, so absolutely.
And yeah, guys, I'm gonna say this just so it's in stone, so we eventually have to do it. We're gonna do an Indies in 2001 to 2002 show soon too. We're going to talk about all the Indies and how exciting a time that was.
Yeah, because you know we did that show years ago, me, you, and Wes, but we'll remix it. We'll do it like a Wes remix, but without Wes. See, sadly,
brain is fried because when you mentioned doing a show with Wes before we got on here, I'm like, oh, that must have been one I didn't do.
Dude.
I fucking did it, and I don't remember.
You know how long ago it was now?
When was it?
8 years ago.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we did it in 2016.
Yeah, so like we'll do a remix of that because you'll have a better memory of what we talked about. But yeah, I would love to talk more indie stuff with you because I know you had the finger on the pulse. And
well, we both did, man. We were into it. You were sending me videotapes of shit at that time, yeah, too. I was getting West shit. I mean, we were living the life.
It was like 23 years ago, which is fucking crazy.
Oh, we're old.
No, we're old, but like 23 years ago, man, and it was just that excitement, you know, where you're like – it's the excitement of like – when you'd watch WWF or WCW and you'd see a debut back in the day, and I was like, oh, wow, new debuting wrestler, exciting. But, like, there was, like, fucking 100 debuts from all over the country that was on tapes that you have to get. And it was just like, wow.
I mean, you weren't just finding wrestlers. You were finding promotions.
Yeah, and there wasn't GIFs, and there wasn't, like, me clipping up fucking matches and throwing them all over Twitter and stuff. And, like, you had imagination of, like, oh, well, shit, who's this person? Oh, this person said he was good. I got to check it out. And he did what move? Like, I remember Red did a Phoenix Splash on, like, a Goodman show. And I was like, oh, my God, is he the first wrestler ever to do an actual Phoenix Splash that isn't Hayabusa in the United States? And, like, just shit like that where you'd ask around and email, and it was so nerdy and dorky and fun. And, you know, it's – them was the days. But, yeah, man, good talking about Macho Man with you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so we'll have that show come down the line. So be on the lookout for that. Who knows when. But, Naylor, yeah, always great doing these shows with you, man. It's so easy and so fun. And we hope everybody has a great time listening. And, yeah, who knows when we'll do another one again. So, for Naylor's Chris, and so long from the Peach State. of Georgia.